Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. We have a lot of boxing to talk about this past weekend, and this upcoming weekend, we got some great fights happening. We'll go off with the ESPN card really quick. Now, Victor Caio was supposed to be the veteran fighter here, stepping in against Emmanuel Transformer Taylor. Obviously, Taylor was supposed to be the kid making the leap. And he had his knockout over Serrano, Raymond Serrano, who had just been knocked out prior to that, to the kid from San Francisco from Fillmore, which was Kareem Mayfield, the hard hitter. And, you know, we really didn't know a whole lot about Taylor. And he started at the ESPN on January 25th. What a great sensational knockout over Serrano. I think it was like in the sixth round or eighth round or something like that. So he goes in with Victor Caio, and Caio was on a winning streak. His last loss was to Nate Campbell, the Galaxy Warrior, and he had been a sparring partner for Brandon Rios, and, you know, he was putting in some work in Southern California. So he gets in there, and the thought is that he's going to give some work to the Transformer Taylor. But Taylor just showed, you know, even though he got dropped, I think he got dropped in the fifth round, he was on shaky legs, but he showed poise. He got back up, and he got himself together, and he was able to turn the tables around with his heavy shots, which he later stopped Victor on the eighth round. I don't know about you, Gabriel, and our listeners, but this kid is starting to really catch my eye. You know, when you think about Friday night fights or like solo boxeo or the new generation, these are supposed to be the platform for fighters that we're not too sure yet. And they're being built. They have to be built up. I don't know how much more can we see from Manny Taylor, but what I'm seeing, I like.
Yeah, I really like him. He's very... He's just very workmanlike, you know. And I didn't think he was that shaky when he got back up from the knockdown. He got dropped. He got up. He kind of went back to work. You know, it took him a little while to get right back in. But he had a general rhythm of just kind of coming forward. What I don't like is the shield defense. I don't think really holds up forever. It's kind of Lamont Peterson-like or Margarito-like, where he just kind of comes forward hidden behind that guard. I mean, Winky Wright, you could almost say it was like that, but Winky knew how to use that jab.
Right.
It was just like this constant, like, you know, spear that was getting at you, kind of pistoning into you, knocking down your, you know, the gates of your castle while he was coming forward. I think that really, and there's kind of like a perpetual motion that Taylor doesn't have. I don't think it's next level stuff. I think his tenacity, certainly his toughness, his resilience is all world class, but, the kind of lack of motion in his game. You know, there's no bounce in his step. It's like, I'm just going to slide forward, be behind this, be there, and when you let me, I'm going to bang on you. And when it was time for him to let go, all of a sudden he was really dialed in on Caio. I was very impressed by his accuracy when he started to open up late in the fight. But I think at only some level that's going to get it done for him. A lot of guys are going to let him just walk right to them and be right there without, you know, kind of some feints or a double jab or some other way to kind of slide in there. But I think we're just seeing the beginnings of Emmanuel Taylor. I like the beginnings of what we're seeing. He's starting to come into his own. It's a solid win. If a guy's been stopped before, you better make sure that you stop him as well. And he did that. He showed, you know, the Victor Caio, when he gets on a different level, he gets stopped. And so Emmanuel Taylor has kind of scrabbled his way to that level. And it was a, you know, rough performance, but a great performance. I'm very, very excited for seeing him in the future. He's a good action fighter.
He is. He's a really good action fighter. And, you know, like I said, I go back and talk about
the way the ESPN is supposed to bring up fighters, and you don't give them a padded record. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to give them a warm body that has a possibility of giving you a run for your money. And that's what Victor was supposed to be. And obviously that's what he did do on that fifth round. But at the same time, the work of the younger fighter who's got to get that exposure out there is he's obviously supposed to be tested. And I think he was tested. With Raymond Serrano, that first fight in January, that one wasn't that major of a test. It was whether or not for Serrano if he was going to be able to get back on his feet, but he ended up, running into a wall, which was Taylor. Now, Taylor, we've seen what he could do, and we obviously saw what he can do when he gets back up from being dropped. I only see good things happening for him in the future. And, ESPN should hold on to him for a short bit, but he might, after this year, Star Boxing may go, okay, it's time to kind of jump him up. But I'd like to see him one more time on ESPN before we see him, kind of trail away to like a Showtime, Showtime New Generation or, HBO or anything like that. I don't know. I'm not sure how much pull Star Boxing has at the moment, but they definitely have a star there in the making. Not a major star, but a minor league guy there that can make enough noise to get fight fans, really, really excited to sit down and watch.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to be matched well, but he's just got a fun style, I think for me it's just there's some improvements that need to be made. I think guys are giving movement, that are giving him angles. I mean, Kaio was giving him that early on, but you just knew it wasn't going to last. He kind of was just moving way too much, throwing way too much. And what he was throwing wasn't having a big effect on Taylor. It was just kind of like bouncing off his arms and you keep coming forward. Light welterweight, he's young. He's only got 18 fights, he's 22 years old. So I think you can slowly kind of bring him along. But he's a guy that will eventually, 5-10 fights down the line, if they keep him busy, he's a guy that will suddenly kind of be in the mix. A fight between him and Lamont Peterson would be interesting, would be action-packed. But it's a little soon,
It is a little soon, I was going to say.
But, this is the thing he's going to have to watch out for. I mean, he fought 5 times in 2011, but only once in 2012. And that was a 6-rounder. Now he's in the 10-rounders, and he's starting to fight. He's fought twice now. That's more like it. So the more he takes people out, and the faster they can turn him around, the better. And especially with Golden Boy working on that East Coast, he's going to build himself a little following fighting out there. In Jersey, in New York, Pennsylvania, D.C., that whole Eastern Seaboard. He's going to build something for himself, particularly the way he fights. 3 stoppages in his last 6 fights. That's the way you got to get it done. And even the Prentice Brewer fight was a good fight that he lost. So I'm very excited about Emmanuel Taylor.
Really quick, if you haven't downloaded the app, it's on Apple now, and you can definitely get it on Android with Google Store. You type in all capital letters, LIITR, boxing, or you could type in the whole word, Leave It in the Ring, for the Apple. You can get it on your iPad as well, on your Apple. We're putting some new features on there. I'd say within another week, not even, I think tomorrow night or Saturday night, the premiere, the start of the Gabriel Montoya series, which would be called The Naked Truth, is going to be on. It's going to be on the mobile. And the Boxing Blitz should be following that very soon. Also, what we're doing on there, if you haven't taken notice yet, we were tweeting it out today, is we're putting fighters' playlists on there. The songs that they work out to when they're getting prepared for an upcoming fight, so that you can kind of get in tune with them. And if you're a guy that likes to work out, you could listen to their playlist and get motivated through their playlist as well. Also, too, you can be able to buy the tickets of their upcoming fight on the mobile app, or if they have an event, a meet and greet, you can get a chance to make sure that you're in tune to where they're going to be at and how to buy the tickets. Right now we got Brandon Reel, so we want to thank him and his team for being the first fighter to allow us to put their playlist on the Leaving the Ring mobile app.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to kind of groove to his music, but I'm really digging the app, man. I finally got my iPhone all updated and everything. so I was able to download it. And I'm liking it. I'm excited about doing The Naked Truth. I'm hoping it gets out before Friday, hopefully tomorrow, because the interview is it's more of a preview of what The Naked Truth is going to be about, kind of taking you behind the scenes of what it's like to be a boxing writer is this episode. And what I do is just take you back into more of the private one-on-one session where there's about four or five different writers, including myself, that are just print media talking to Tim Bradley. So it's more of an intimate setting backstage before the press conference, the final press conference for the Ruslan-Provodnikov fight. It's about a 30-minute interview, and he covers a wide range of subjects. We talk about all kinds of things, from PED testing to nutrition to his feelings on guys that don't take PED testing. He basically says they're all dirty. Tim just is no holds barred. It's a look into the Pacquiao fight. Really just it's kind of fun. And it's also that you'll hear a little moment in there where kind of talking off the side. It's almost like you're kind of looking over my shoulder or listening in on my job since it's all audio. But it should be fun, man. I'm very excited.
Yeah, he has a different tone to his voice now, which he's going to be coming on Leaving the Ring a little later tonight, as well as Ponce de Leon, who's got a sensational upcoming fight against Abner Mars, undefeated fighter. But we're going back with that interview you did with him on The Naked Truth, which a lot of fans will be able to tune in and listen to. But it's only going to be on the mobile app. And you can hear the difference of tone of how he is now. You know, he went through stages after that fight. And, you know, I don't want to spoil too much of what he said, but, you know, definitely we're going to touch on some of the things that he said on The Naked Truth and get it on here on Leaving the Ring. We're going to pass in some fight fans, but then we're going to talk about Hugo Centeno versus DeAndre Leatherwood. And that was, we were really excited about that fight. I know I was. And it didn't turn out to be exactly what we wanted it to be. It was more of a hug fest. It turned out to be a really, really ugly kind of fight. Centeno really couldn't get off on that with Leatherwood. And you know, to me, it was both to blame in that fight in terms of grabbing and holding and smothering each other's punches. And then Hugo, the boss, eventually down the stretch in those later rounds, he tried to get his distance so that he can get leverage behind those punches. So both guys went in trying to figure each other out. DeAndre's dad, his stepfather, you know, we talk about keeping it real, man. He was telling him what was up. He was just, you know, like, dude, what are you doing? You're not even doing anything we did in the gym. You're looking for one big, perfect punch. You're losing this fight. You're really losing this fight. And I liked what he was telling them, but at the same time, one of the commentators made a comment about this, and I completely agreed. He said, you're telling them the realistic of what's happening inside the ring, but you're not giving a solution. There's no solution to what Hugo Centeno was doing to him. And instead, the kid went out there trying to muster something up, trying to make some magic there, but at the same time, he had no direction, so he had to try to do it himself. He had to try to see what Hugo Centeno was doing in terms of mistakes when it was his corner, who's supposed to be the tower coaches, looking down in the field and trying to find those gaps, those holes, so that the quarterback can throw it down the pipeline and the guy can receive it and get a goal. You know, and nothing was told to him like that. So here was a kid that was running blind. And every time he was running blind, he was getting tackled.
And I'm muted. This fight, you know what? I think what it was, it wasn't so much styles that was horrible. I think it was an inexperience. It was like two guys that didn't know how to quite get range, didn't quite get into that mode where they their angles slid in and were actually able to slam home. Hugo had moments where he did. His jab was working. He was just kind of outworking, just letting his hands go. It was like sometimes when everything doesn't like perfectly mesh, you've just got to start letting your hands go. Let the jab go, multiple variations, or just let just let them go. See what lands. Start to find out. You take a little bit off your punches, but you're just boom, 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 touching until you can kind of start slamming things home. And Leatherwood never really quite got into that groove. It was almost like Tavares Cloud, and we'll get to that later. He got to it in moments, and I think there was different reasons why he didn't fully let his hands go. But With Leatherwood, you know, I think he just let the moment get the better of him, and it was like quicksand. The more they went along, the less he was able to really get things done. I thought he had a kind of a groove towards like the heading into the middle of the fight, but then it just sort of went away, and then it was just kind of an ugly fight. I don't think either guy came away looking great. You can maybe chalk it up to styles and certainly a learning experience, but it was a brutal fight, man.
It was a brutal fight. I think for even for both men, I can't imagine both of them walking away feeling satisfied. I mean, you definitely want the W at the end of the bout, but you want to have a statement with that W. And I'm pretty sure Hugo Centeno, who have had a few times here on Leave the Ring, would agree with us. It was a win, definitely. But if we can go back or rematch it, I'm not sure they would want to rematch with somebody like that right now. But you know, you go back and you look at the tape, it wasn't something that you could be proud of and say, yeah, you know, it was a tough fight. This was supposed to be one of my toughest fights. I moved up in rounds, not in weight, but I moved up in rounds, and the confidence there was obviously from the management, but the performance. And I don't want to put blame on Hugo. I thought towards the end of those rounds, you know, when it got into the 7th, 8th, and 9th, and 10th, I honestly started to see him. He was trying to get himself ranges, you know, and the ref, oh God, the ref, man. I mean, what can we say about the ref? I'm going to let some fight fans on.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, I thought the ref was kind of brutal. I thought, I was kind of actually thinking more of the Dawson. You got me actually kind of angry, Dave. You got me looking at this video that you sent me earlier, you know, the one I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't tell me the part about how it says across the front of it, don't listen to Gabe Montoya. What he says is irrelevant.
Oh, you know what? I completely forgot about that, you know, because just to let fight fans know that, you know.
I wouldn't even say his name.
I wouldn't either, but, you know, I've been sick here, you know, really off and on. I've been going to the doctors. I've been having a ST scan and the whole work, so I actually left work today and riding back, and, you know, I took some painkillers and stuff, you know. And so when I was going to send you this stuff, because I've had tons of people just kind of hitting me up about the app, you know, fighters that are going to be putting their playlists on and all the other things that we have just kind of intertwining with each other, them trying to clear and get done, that when I sent you that video – of a particular person that took our interview, and you know, they take it for their website to get hits, which is great, you know, it's the exposure. But I forgot to tell you what they had put across their video, which is skip through Gabriel Montoya's part because it's irrelevant or something like that, you know. And that's why I had to call you up and told you about it, you know. I was like, man.
Well, it's this guy Farseno who used to call into our show. I call him Farseno because everything he does is a farce. He's just kind of one of those hangers-on, wants to be in the business. Can't decide if he's media or what he is or if he's just a lapdog. But I refer to him as my stalker because it's kind of creepy. I blocked him from Twitter. I blocked him. Recently, I had to block him on Facebook because he started sending me messages there. Hasn't really resorted to email yet, but I will block him there when he arrives there. We don't have him on the show anymore because he's kind of creepy. And he makes videos about me. Sometimes it's erroneous. Other times it's just simply taking good work that we do on this show, like the Robert Alcazar video, and taking the juiciest parts for himself. Because that's what he is. That's what leeches and vultures do. They wait, you know, for somebody else to do something, and then they kind of just pick off the parts that they can get. It's kind of similar to what rats do as well. So that's why I'm a little upset. I just was a little distracted looking at that. I mean, you know, I don't take what he says seriously, but I do hate seeing people kind of suck off our work and steal what we do and then somehow try to call it their own. It's why I had problems with Ellie Sec back early on. It's like, don't film my interviews, put them up, and not give me any sort of credit. And in this case, with the stalker known as Farseno, he's not only stealing our work, but he's then denigrating us at the same time. Because when you talk about me, you're talking about Dave, and when you talk about Dave, you're talking about me, as far as we're concerned. So, I don't know. Maybe we'll have to make him change his name and apologize as well. We'll see.
Let's pass in some fight fans here on Leaving the Ring. Let's talk about some boxing. Let me get the person that's been on hold. Man, there's a few folks that have been on hold for quite some time here. I think this is our boy CT, man. Are you there, brother?
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
Good, man. I know your number by
doing
heart.
Good,
bro.
Man.
I'm gonna start stalking you pretty soon and stuff. Start texting you, drunk texting you and stuff.
Hey.
So tell us what's on your mind, brother.
That's fine.
I definitely want to talk about you know, Hopkins. I mean, I picked him last week when we went over the the predictions. I think as boxing fans, we should definitely appreciate this guy as a prize fighter. You know, I don't think it can be duplicated pretty much as how he's been doing it. Not only, you know, does he win another title belt at 48, you know, it's just his whole career in general, the way he came up, his whole story in general, you know, how he's always proved us wrong, how, you know, starting with Trinidad, nobody picked Trinidad. I mean, everybody picked Trinidad to beat him. You know, everybody picked Pavlik. I mean, there's always going to be styles that's going to give him trouble. You know, the type of volume type puncher, fast puncher, a fighter who has a great jab, and a fighter who doesn't let him dictate the pace. You know, the kind of Calzaghe style, Dawson style, you know, Roy Jones, all those guys, and Pascal to an extent gave him trouble. But I think with Cloud, Hopkins knew what he was fighting against. You know, that's why he picked this fight. I know you guys picked Cloud last week, but, you know, as soon as the bell rung, I saw Cloud, you know, hesitating too much. He kind of, you know, every time Hopkins would throw him a feint, he would fall for it. The subtle movement from Hopkins. I knew that type of style would give Cloud trouble, because once I saw Yusef Mack is able to do and Campillo, I knew Hopkins had him, you know what I mean? It was a pretty good fight. I was impressed with both fighters. It's just that I think Cloud could did more, but he hesitated too much, and he let Hopkins dictate the pace last week. And that's why I think
I'm sorry, go ahead. No, I agree with you. You know, I mean, I think that Tavares Cloud fell into the what every other fighter does. You know, we mentioned this last week, is the problem with a lot of these fighters out there is that when they get in with a master boxer or you know, or a guy that mentally can get in your head, they want to mentally get back into that head and feud with them, or they want to get in the ring and try to outbox the boxer. You can't do that. And it's proven again and again and again and over and over and over, and these guys are not doing their homework. They got to go back and look at how Bernard Hopkins lost. It's exactly what you said, a volume puncher, a guy that keeps your hands busy, a guy that doesn't allow the boxer to think, because the boxer needs time to think. The boxer needs time to move. He needs time to counterpunch. If you don't give him any of those options, and these don't have to be big punches, these got to be setup punches to get the big punches in. And Tavares Cloud didn't do any of that. He had his moments, which was, 3 seconds per 3 minutes? That's not enough. That's not enough to get a head start. That's not enough to make the old man get tired. You let a 48-year-old man, what is he, 46, 48 years old, those are legs, 46, 48 years old legs, outwork you, outmaneuver you? Shame on you, man. Shame on you.
Yeah, I think I think there was a few things going on. I think the ref was over-officious. You know, early on it was like, okay, I don't want any rough stuff. Awesome. You probably said that in the dressing room too. You saw it going there. Cool. But then it was just like he wouldn't let each situation play out. I mean, Tavares, there was a lot of times where he started working with one hand, which is legal, and the ref would just immediately break. And, you know, there's no reason to use profanity if you're a ref. That means that you're emotionally involved. And at one point he got kind of lippy with Cloud and called him an MF-er. And it's like, you know what, man? Like, you're not a tough guy. You're not a boxer. You're a ref. Your job is to be unbiased and not pick on the champion in this fight, who is Tavares Cloud, not Bernard Hopkins, a legend. So I thought, you know, Tavares let – I think the inactivity played into it. I think Hopkins' ring generalship and all his overall skill set played into it. But I think I really can't – this is going to get me in trouble. I really can't look at that fight the way everybody else is looking at that fight.
You know what's funny? Before you even get into that – we had a lot of listeners and fans email us, and a lot of the question was, guys, do you think that he's on something? How is it possible that a guy that age looks just like that and still able to perform when he's been in so many fights? And I don't want to throw no accusations, but, you know, with all of the stuff that's been happening in not just our sport, but all sports, I've said this plenty of times. If you're not testing and you're not allowing us to see what's in your body, then you're a suspect. You're a usual suspect.
That's it. That's the bottom line. And it's what Bill Simmons wrote in his column, like, enough. No more being amazed by things that defy logic. I mean, here we are looking at Lance Armstrong. We're just a few months removed from that. Guy gets cancer, loses a ball, ends up winning 7 titles in a row. And we all were complicit and cool, and we celebrated, and we acted like we actually followed the Tour de France every year in American One for those 7 years. And we didn't, but we were like, dude.
I even went to a French class. You know what I mean?
Right. I kind of rode a bike. You know, not really. Well, on Xbox.
Right.
And, you know, we didn't care, but we loved that he was winning. It was the same thing with Barry Bonds. Like, we didn't care that this old dude was all of a sudden ripping him out of the park, like, in a way that he never had before, by like 20-something home runs. And here we are with Bernard Hopkins. Now, what's interesting about Bernard Hopkins is, I'm not even going to use the jail time against him. That was a long time ago. It forged him as a man, and he became a great champion. But he also comes up during an era that wasn't drug tested early on, that now we're entering into this extra drug testing. And we know how easy the tests are to beat, especially when you're doing like maybe 1 or 2, you know, giving a sample before the fight, after the fight, on the weekend of the fight, when all the work should be done. We just know too much. And for Bernard Hopkins to win and then turn around and immediately say, I'm not on drugs, I did this clean. Well, it's kind of weird because nobody asked that question. You're just screaming that. That's kind of weird. And Lance Armstrong.
And how do we know? You know, that's the other thing. Is like, how do we know you're not? I mean,
that's the point, Dave, is that the difference between Lance Armstrong and Bernard Hopkins, other than, you know, what we know now and the admissions and all that, is that while Lance Armstrong was screaming and suing people, saying that he was clean and claiming it, he was actually taking more stringent drug testing than Bernard Hopkins could ever think of doing. So we're taking more tests in 1 year, or maybe let's say a 5-year block, that Bernard Hopkins has taken in his whole career. So I don't want to hear it that Bernard Hopkins is clean. I'm supposed to take his word at, because here's the other thing. What do we celebrate Bernard Hopkins for? For bending and breaking the rules inside the ring. It's not exactly like he's a bastion of integrity. He also has that Ludabella case that he lost.
Let's not forget, too, what he did to Pascal when Pascal had asked that infamous question. You know, are you going to take the test?
Oh, yeah, and he pushed him. Yeah.
Oh, he went ballistic. Remember that? He just went nuts.
Yeah.
He took off.
I'm not saying that he's dirty, but I'm saying, like Dave is, it doesn't mean anything unless you're doing what Nonito Donaire is doing, or at least what Tim Bradley and the other guys are doing. Not USADA testing, VADA testing, because we know how shady USADA appears to be. So, Bernard Hopkins, not buying it. Sorry.
Not yet, at least. This stuff.
I would like to talk about this weekend, actually, the Tim Bradley fight. I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce the guy that he's fighting. Rapnikov? I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce his name. But
that's okay. I know
fan.
How you feel.
I'm a Tim Bradley fan, but I honestly think this guy's going to test him. This style matchup, I think. You know, this guy reminds me a little bit of Golovkin, the way he closes the distance so quickly, and he punches very hard. I want to know how Tim's going to deal with that. I don't know if Tim's ever fought a fighter who's pressured, you know, that type of pressure. Though I know Bradley's very versatile in the ring. It's a very interesting fight to me. I don't think it's an easy fight for Bradley at all. I'm a Bradley fan, like I said, but, you know, and I like the way he's been being treated lately, you know. Like you guys said, I could hear it in his voice also. He sounds like a bitter man to me. You know, I understand his point, but, I mean, he's been treated wrong by Bob Arum and everything.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I think there's a little bit of back and forth. I think it's really easy for us to always blame Bob. I think there's a little bit of both. I mean, like, although, you know, I have to say I really understood Tim's point of view. I don't think that, from Bob Arum's point of view, we offered him $2 million to fight a guy that had just beaten Amir Khan.
Right.
And you know, that's a lot of money for a fight that you already won. You know, and you're going to move that guy up to, you know, to Tim's advantage, move him to welterweight, and they're going to get it on. Tim didn't want that fight. He talked about several fights that didn't happen. Gamboa was another one. Couldn't agree to terms. They tried to get Khan. Couldn't agree to terms. There was a few things that they were trying to do. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure if Khan was one of them. There was a Golden Boy fighter that was another one. But Tim looks at it, you know, like, and I asked him this on, and this is kind of part of the naked truth, but he kind of looked at it like, look, here's a guy that just tested positive for synthetic testosterone, admitted that he won his title while on it.
Which is Lamont Peterson.
Yeah, which is Lamont Peterson. And I've already beaten him. I kind of just don't want any part of all that. And you don't really get to go from that straight to my title. Like, I worked hard and was honorable getting that Manny Pacquiao fight. However you feel about the judging, you know, I won the fight, I got the decision, and I'm going to give this particular guy a shot at my title after all that? Like, nah, hell nah. You know, I'll pass. And I don't disagree with that with Timmy. But I don't think at the same time, to Bob Arum's credit, they were offering him fights and trying to get him fights, and he was turning them down. Or he wasn't, you know, he turned down the Peterson. Things didn't work out. So it's kind of a bit of just the way it played out, you know?
Yeah, I get it.
But I do agree with you about Provodnikov. It's going to be a tough fight, particularly late. He's figured some things out about himself, and the camp has had two camps to look at Tim Bradley. So it's going to be interesting. I'm curious to see what Bradley brings to the table in terms of adjustments. He's talked about straightening out his technique, really kind of working on generating more power. And people that say that can't happen, you're absolutely dead wrong. This is a game of inches and little adjustments. You're turning your body into a weapon. You're making yourself like a trigger that also is the bullet, you know. There's many ways you can kind of adjust your feet, adjust your hips, get everything moving in conjunction, just a little bit tighter, a little bit more. Maybe he won't become Tommy Hearns, but he'll hit stronger and with more force through his body. That definitely can happen. We'll see about the gloves, too. They're keeping that very close to the vest. I've asked, and they still won't tell me. So we'll see if he'll answer that tonight.
Yeah, I think he does what he has to do to get everything done in the ring. And I'm picking Bradley to win, but I think it's be close. Looking forward to the fight.
All right, brother. Thanks for calling. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay?
Thank you.
All right, man. Thank you.
Don't forget to go and download on Apple or your Google Store, the Leaving the Ring mobile app, and you can call in directly from the app into the show, and you can listen live stream here on, you know, Leaving the Ring. Let's pass in another fight fan here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with the area code 724. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, how's it going, guys? I just called in to listen, that's all.
Okay, no problem, brother. Thanks for calling in. Let's go with area code 951. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, peace.
What's up, brother?
Peace.
What's on your mind?
Oh, man. I was out there at that Fantasy Springs, man, out there ringside. Y'all assessment was pretty good about that fight. They didn't really get their distance. And I believe it was kind of close to that for the sixth round, and it got real ugly, that Leatherwood fight.
It did. I mean, I don't know.
But wasn't that his first time going to 10 rounds or something?
It was the first time for Hugo Centeno. It was
right.
The first time.
Okay.
But, you know, I thought Hugo, in my opinion, I thought he was pacing himself right because he looked like he had the more energy down that you know, stretch, you know?
Yeah.
Where Leatherwood, to me, this is the thing that a lot of people think that physically, you can be physically in shape, you know, your endurance can be there, stamina could be up, but it mentally, if you're strained, you burn yourself out pretty quick. And I think with his father telling him, you're losing this fight. You got to do something with no direction. Here was a kid that was trying to overthink what he needed to do. He was trying to overthink how to solve the puzzle. And that, to me, what slowed him down. That's what gassed him out a bit.
Yeah, from where I was sitting at, though, if he would have jabbed that body, came up top a little bit, and the way Hugo was working his jab hand up and down, he could have came over top of that. I mean, like when you're there, I don't know how I looked it on TV, but you see a lot of different angles when you be there live, but it was a lot of different things he really could have did. But all in all, it was a decent fight. I mean, like you say, they both, them lights was big for both of them because it did get kind of ugly after the sixth round.
It did too, you know, and there was
too close and ugly, really.
Yeah, they both were trying to get in and mix it up, but it, you know, they just did, they keep tangling up. And
yeah,
it, to me, they both haven't learned really how to fight in the inside. You know, Leatherwood, man, there were things there that Hugo was doing that Leatherwood could have took advantage. Example was that every time Leatherwood would throw that wild shot, Hugo would bend down at the waist, try to, you know, get the shot to go over his head. Leatherwood's cap could have told him that. Say, hey, feign him like you're going to throw a big shot, and then catch him when he bends down, because he's not looking up to see what's coming at him. But none of those adjustments were there, unfortunately.
Right. And I knew that Clyde was going to be chasing Hopkins around. So I don't even want to talk about that one. Like I say, after I've seen his other fights. I mean, I've seen it.
Yeah.
You already knew. And Hopkins see it too. Hopkins study fights. You know what I'm saying? He's been doing it for years. And that's why you really picked it. Hopkins still got a little bounce to him. And once you've seen them two fights, you know, then you got to remember, you see Yusuf Macca is from Philly. So, you know, once you've seen that, he knew what he could have did with the young boy. But I don't think Clyde should give it up. Everybody's throwing him under the bus. It's just now that he got somebody where he can get more fights, like Gabe said, he just needs more fights.
I never understand why people do that. It's like, how can you say in one breath, like, he's a legend, he's great, and the other guy's garbage and he should retire? Well, wait a minute. Like, he didn't give him a career-ending beating by any means. I thought Bernard put a brilliant version of keep away. That's really all he did.
Right.
He avoided a fight. I wasn't that impressed. I got to be honest. I mean, I think we go way overboard when a guy knows how to box. Personally, I wanted to see a fight, and Tavares didn't give me that, but he tried to give me that in spots, and the ref was like, no, no, no. You know, break. It just felt ordained.
That's why I ain't really even talking about it, because I kind of knew how that was going to play out. But I got an old school question for y'all.
Go ahead.
Marvin Hagler, right? It was rumored, I don't know if it's rumored or true, he was really a right-hander and fought right-handed. And he had to switch left-handed because nobody was fighting. But have anybody seen any tapes of him right-handed? Because I would love to see him fighting in his natural stance.
Well, I know he would switch. You know, he switched in the Hearns fight. He switched throughout his career. But, I'm not sure if he's a natural lefty or not. I know he had power in both hands.
You know, I don't know either. And I got a lot of documentaries about him, you know.
They say he was naturally right-handed, but people wouldn't fight him, so he had to switch left hand just to get fights.
Interesting.
I can go back and look at that.
Even back during that period, and really up until the last, I would say, 10 years, up till the time, like, I was 19, this is almost like 20 years ago now, when I first walked into a boxing gym, and it was old school, you know, Tony Lopez's gym, or his old trainer, Don Connolly's old gym up in Sacramento, and I line up as a southpaw. That's just how I am. And the guy was like, oh, hell no. And he switched me around, and they forced me to be a right-hander. Back then, it was like a stigma. Nobody wanted to face southpaw. So that's an interesting thing. I mean, I've been wanting to try to get Hagler on. We've been pursuing him.
I heard him get him on years ago. Yeah,
I'd like to get an interview with him. I think Dave, you've had him on before.
Yeah, I've had him on. I think we could still get him on. I just got to reach out and talk to his. I believe it was his wife that was his publicist at the time and stuff. We tried to get him on when his trainer had passed away, but he wasn't doing any interviews at the time. But I think he's ready, and it's overdue to get him back on Leaving the Ring.
Then that Paulie fight.
That kind of scared me, but I think Adrian going to walk him down like old school Aaron Pryor. But I
got to be honest
with
you, man.
It might be a problem, man, because Paulie been hit, and he's a boxer, and we're going to see really if Adrian can really walk him down. But I think he might break that body down and take him out late if he can. But I think it's a good matchup just to see what he can really do.
You know, it's a good matchup, but to me it's more of a safe matchup. You know,
this is definitely safe because if Paulie really can't hurt him, he's definitely going to walk him down. You know,
right.
But Paulie been hit by, you know, like when Cotto was Cotto, you know, he was hit by some of them boys before. And Paulie, I don't know when Paulie ever been knocked out. I mean, maybe he had, but I don't know nobody that really stopped him. Not as y'all can tell me.
Yeah, you know, that's why we had mentioned that, you know, to me, Paulie reminds me a lot of Hector Camacho Sr., you know, a guy that was able to absorb a lot of punches, you know. Could box when he needed to box. But here's the thing about Paulie is that even at 147, we're seeing an older version of him. He's not as mobile. He doesn't jab backwards like he used to do. You know, And for Adrian Broner to jump up to 147, here's two things for me. It's a safe fight, but this, and here's the other thing. While I'm not too excited about it if it comes down to it, but and this is the reason why is because there's so many great fights at 140.
Believe he's gonna go right back down because a lot of them boys tied up. I believe he's gonna go up here and get some money, stay busy, and then you know probably do like Josito Lopez because I really like him too. Nah, he jumped up, but he shouldn't have stayed. He shouldn't have went further than what he went with Ortiz.
I agree. Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. But and then I don't think they're going to mess up that Cash Kylen Broner right now. So that's why I say for real. I mean, these promoters know what they're doing. Like I said, I love boxing, but it's a business.
They definitely put
him up there, you know what I'm saying, to go up there and let his kingdom tumble. You know? I mean, go up there, make you a little bit of money. And you can play with two weight classes, you know. And plus, he probably big anyway. And a lot of people got to understand when you training and getting ready for fights, usually if you want 30-something, this and that, you sparring 54s and smaller for power and then smaller people for speed. And, you know, so he up there and he can take them punches. And Paulie ain't really no puncher. So, you know.
Yeah, it's it is what it is. It's Floyd 2.0.
I mean, yeah.
It really is Floyd 2.0.
They ain't going to cash that boy out like that. I mean, you know, probably get an upset. I mean, that's what it is. If he get upset, that's what it is. But we know what that one is.
Now it'll have to be the upset of the year. Hey, brother, I'm going to put you back on hold. Call it in.
All right. Yeah. Peace.
Peace.
I love calls like that. You know, a fight fan that is going to intrigue his conversation and get people's blood boiling and talking here.
You know, I mean, the fight is just, I don't know. It just seems very, you know, people always talk about in-house. I would say without revealing certain things, it's very in-house, this fight. It's just kind of it's a deal Paulie can't refuse. Let's play it that way.
So was
the last one, so it was moving the date. Yeah, it's just a fight Paulie can't refuse. So, you know, it is what it is. It's he's going to jump up. He's going to get a belt. He'll probably come back down to 140 or something. I mean, it's very P.T. Barnum. You act like you're a hit, and you're a hit. Broner acts, you know, immediately, we saw this two fights ago. He was putting himself in the same conversation with Floyd. Not just I'm like him, but, you know, in terms of I'm copying him, but me and Floyd are in rare air. You know, we're the ones that call these shots. And the more you act like that and you treat yourself like you're the elite, eventually everybody's going to treat you that way, especially when you have a PR machine behind them like he does. So I don't think we're ever going to – you know, welcome to the new reality of boxing. This is the next generation. Floyd's going to be, you know, around for six fights, you know, 30 months at Showtime running things. Al Haymon has his own network. Boxing's kind of been had a minor takeover. And you look at – where Top Rank is, and I think they've got some nice pieces for the future, and they'll always be right there because I think they're a smarter company in terms of how they build fighters. When it comes to marketing and the entertainment industry part of it, Golden Boy's proving to be rather formidable. It's going to be an interesting future. It's one of the reasons I've been planning a retirement for years.
You know, here's the thing, too, is that Adrian Broner jumps up in weight at 147. I'm wondering how many of those 140-pounders stay at 140. You know, you got to chase the money. And Adrian Broner is starting to prove that there's dollar signs following him. There's a trail of dollar signs following him. So it only makes perfect sense and logic. You know, we will lose some good fights at 140 by Broner jumping up. But just like our last caller said, probably not even stay there. Just, you know, taste out. He might, you know, try out the waters in that division, but, you know, go back down. There's a lot of money for this kid to make in whatever division he decides to float around. There's three divisions he can float around and do what he needs to do. Obviously, staying at 135, to me, that's more of the safe haven because you definitely are going into, you know, you'll enter at your own risk going at 148 and 147.
Well, I think he's intent on doing things better and different than Floyd, you know, or at least different, and we'll figure out if it's better as we go along, you know. And a jump from 135 to 147 to pick up a legit belt from a legit fighter with a lot of experience, that's pretty impressive, especially if he jumps down and says, all right, chumps, let's do the 140 fights. You know, and as Floyd, you know,
I don't know, I'm not going to call Paulie legit, though. I mean,
why not?
I don't know, you know, I mean, I like Paulie, but I go back to that Conyo fight. I didn't see him win that fight.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. That's a very good point. You're right.
You know, right. I mean, Paulie's a tough guy.
But he's legitimate. I mean, everybody can have an off night, a bad style matchup, a guy that's eager. But you're right. The Conor fight makes me go, well, I mean, I know he's not. Nobody knows. Everybody knows he's not going to win. So it's not that legitimate of a fight.
That's the thing, too, is that every time Paulie steps up and faces a guy he's a better version of Zab Judah.
And I think I'm probably one of the first guys to say it. And I don't usually toot my own horn, but I mean, a lot of guys are going to say, well, we don't know what he's like at 47. But, I mean, you know this. Steve was shocked on the next round when I said it, that we're not going to know about Broner until he's at 147. And Steve was like, 147? What are you talking about?
Right.
And now you look at him, and he's going to be a 147-pounder. I've been saying it all along.
You know, when you just say that on TRI, I spilled my beer, just to let you know that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's alcohol abuse, folks. but yeah, you know, I mean, I think he can put a whooping on Paulie. Just looking at him, he's shorter, but he's just stronger. You see him in person; he's a thick dude.
He's a bulky kid.
Yeah, he is. He's big boned. So, it is what it is. Welcome to the new world. Welcome to another guy who will tell you how great he is, and not fight the fights that you want him to fight. Awesome.
Well, let's pass in another fight fan really quick. We're going to have, like I said, Timothy Bradley around 6 o'clock. And then right after that, we're going to have Daniel Ponce de Leon. And then we're going to have a fighter that hasn't been in the scene for about, what, I believe, like 3 years. The guy Zahir Rahim. I don't know if a lot of fight fans remember that name. They called him the King at one time.
Are we putting him out at 7 o'clock? Because I actually...
7 o'clock.
Oh, he did call back?
He did call me back.
Oh, okay.
I hate when they do that, but yeah.
Dude, I moved. Okay. Okay, I'll be right back.
That's how we do it here on Leaving the Ring. You know, we always got to, especially when you're doing a live show, we try to get fighters on at a certain time, and sometimes, you know, we got to, you know, fudge things here and there and shave minutes and seconds just to fit them in. And I'm excited to talk to Raheem, man. He's a guy that beat Eric Morales when he was supposed to get his rematch with Manny Pacquiao. It was the third fight. And I think it was the second fight. It was leading into the rematch with Manny. And he beat him, and then all of a sudden, you know, he was supposed to have that sweepstake, but they didn't. He was kind of overlooked and overrun and put way back in the burner. So, he didn't have that. After that, he was kind of struggling of getting fights and getting in there, and his career kind of just faded into the distance. So now he's making a comeback, and we're kind of curious. You know, it's almost like with Juan the Baby Bull Diaz, you know, coming out of the dark, wants to get back into the light of fight fans, so they can witness them again, and hopefully they can bring some greatness. Maybe this comeback is an inspiration for Bernard Hopkins. They all look at him and say, man, this old man is still doing it. I'm going to get in there. And, you know, too, I was really, let me put this out there, even though we had a say about Bernard Hopkins, okay, because the question lingers when we have a sport that's not completely cleansed. I was impressed with Bernard. You know, the old man still got legs. The old man can, he still has tricks. The old man can make the younger man look like the old man by having him chase him down. You know, a lot of the stuff that he does bring to the table is skills. And you can't enhance those skills with drugs or anything else like that. It takes experience. So I was impressed with Bernard's performance. But at the same time, when you get fight fans, they're asking the big question, whether or not, because our sport is not as innocent as we would want it to be, and fighters are not necessarily as clean as they should be, it's only fair for us to start scratching our heads and say, you remember that song? What was that? That old saying, things that make you go, So anyway, fight fans, you want to call in? 347-215-7598, you certainly can. were you going to say, Gabe?
I'm just working through the guest thing. Hang on 1 second. I texted you something. You should probably look at it. I don't know where to, because we kind of switched to Skype. We're not on Facebook anymore, so I never know where to text you.
Oh, let me check there. My fans, you want to call in again? Let me throw out that number, 347-215-7598. Let's patch in another fight fan really quick while I look for what Gabriel had texted me, because I don't see it here on hand. I got two. Let's go with area code 856. You're on live right now and leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Yes, you're on live, brother. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. I just want to touch on boxing fans, where true boxing fans can find themselves in like a catch 22. For every Floyd Mayweather, Adrian Broner, Canelo, Chavez, these guys that make all this money, there are dozens and dozens of Glenn Johnsons and E.C. Smiths. And when you think about it, we feel cheated when guys go after the money, but then we don't say nothing when it comes to the guys that we feel deserve the big paydays but don't get them because of the boxing politics. It's almost like we as fans are talking out of both sides of our mouths here. Look at Gabriel Rosado, who put up a hell of a fight against Triple G. And you know, look at the position that he's in right now. You know, he's not going to get the big payday in his next fight. You know, you got to take, in my opinion, you got to take advantage while it's hot. And we might not like it as fans. But at the end of the day, when I listened to an interview where Ishii was talking about he was sitting on a bus and people wondering why he's sitting on a bus, you know, after being on TV and fighting and things like that, it's difficult, you know, for a person like that. So what happens is these guys start to, you know, go along with the status quo in order to make money, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, the bottom line is this is an entertainment business, you know, and I'm not going to pretend to say I know all the political machinations that held Ishii Smith back. Damn it, Dave. texted me and threw my whole train of thought off. Welcome to Leave It in the Ring behind the scenes. the thing with Ishii, and I like Ishii. I'm not, you know, I know we kind of went back and forth and he unfollowed me recently on Twitter. But I say this, you know, I like Ishii. I think I did a lot for him in terms of kind of bringing him back into the audience when we put him on that fighter versus writer thing. It showed him in a different light. I thought I was kind of part of that. So I feel comfortable saying this, but Ishii didn't risk a lot as a fighter early on. He wasn't entertaining. And just because he's skilled doesn't mean he deserves anything. This is the entertainment business, and the guys that entertain us are usually the guys that risk the most in the ring in order to accomplish the goal, which is winning. Just being in there is risky, but then there's the guys that are special, the Sugar Ray Leonards. We love Sugar Ray because he was not just because he was technically skilled, but because he would get in there and dogfight. And it took a long time for Ishii to get to that point in his career where he did. I mean, he's more entertaining now because his wheels are going a little bit. And he's got to stay in the pocket a little more, and he's more vulnerable. That's why he's, you know, we're pulling for him. That, and he seems to be a genuinely good person. With the Sandy Hook stuff, and he does seem to be a guy that is pretty devout, although I would have preferred us to talk it out rather than unfollow it out. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. I think...
Well, think about a guy like Glenn Johnson.
Okay.
You know, and we all love him. He's the road warrior. You know, he's decided to retire and sail off in the sunset. We all want him to live the rest of his life for all the work he put in and putting his life on the line and doing the things that he had to do to get as far as he's gotten. But then, you know, he says in his interviews he wish he would have made more choices that were more, I guess, political in terms of so that he can maximize his earning power when he had a chance to do it. You know, and then we demonize the guys that actually do it. Now, I hate it. To be honest with you, I'm not a Flo Mo or a Broner Boner. I'm not one of those guys, you know.
Yeah, it's something that we talked about yesterday.
Because I can't stand the minstrel show and the buffoonery personally.
Right? Yeah, it's something Tim and I talked about yesterday, and I want to bring it up to him again today, is you're a good guy, you're a skilled guy. You're just as skilled as Floyd or Hopkins or Andre Ward, in my opinion. He's like one of those all around guys. He's not like he's not super puncher, or super speedy guy, but he wins. And we're going to have him on here in about 2 minutes. But why isn't he a bigger star? Why don't we celebrate intelligent, well spoken people that are skilled? It's got to be the minstrel show and the stupidity and the bad guy routine, particularly for African American fighters. And I don't think that's fair at all. You know,
we've said that a lot. You know what I mean?
I agree with you. And I feel sad for Broner that he's got to act that way. I feel sad for Broner that I don't think he knows any other way to be. And I think it's on Floyd a little bit that he kind of taught him how to be that way by acting the way he does.
So that makes it a little scary looking at the upcoming generation, as you spoke on.
Right.
Everybody's going to follow the blueprint of, well, this is how you get paid.
And it gets worse every time out. Like it's a copy of a copy of a copy. You know, Floyd's copying Ali, who was copying like Gorgeous George, you know, but Ali actually stood for things. You know, he was actually a political figure, and there's a reason why he's known worldwide and respected worldwide as a peacemaker as much as a fighter. Floyd will never be that.
And
Broner's not in there either.
Would you agree that you have to change? Like, okay, we're identifying the issues.
Yeah.
And would you agree that we would have to change it from the top down? Like, I hear all the criticism against Floyd for the Showtime deal, but I always look at it like this. If they're willing to pay Floyd that, how much are they banking on making themselves?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it's almost like the puppet master always gets away with hiding his hands, and we don't see how he's controlling, you know, the puppet. And we don't hold him accountable. We don't hold the institution accountable.
Let me make a point here.
We beat up the puppets every day.
Right. Let me make a point here, though, really quick, you know, because I agree with you guys. But to a certain point, you know, with Floyd Mayweather, how he's acting, you know, I think we have to, as fans and as a nation, we have to take responsibility of what we've created as well. Because when Floyd came out of those Olympics, you know, he was trying to get his name out there, and it took him to kind of create this persona that it got the attention, you know, later. Where I think as Americans, we were looking for the next Ali, we were looking for the Sugar Ray Leonard, you know, we were looking for that particular person, but we were being selective of who we wanted to label that person. So here you had a kid that was like, yo, I got all these skills and stuff, and I may not have the personality or the movement that they were in, but I got it. So I think in turn, here's the kid that went back and go, I need to get these guys' attention. I need to make these millions. And he created this persona, and this persona has become very affected to other youngsters that are now trying to follow this trait. You know, I'm not making excuses for him, but at the same time, I think we need to acknowledge that as well.
I 100% agree. I mean, we'd be bullshitting if we acted like it's not like everybody's problem. I think, you know, you look at it and say, where does it start? It's one of the things I'm going to be working on for our show, The Naked Truth, talking about the U.S. drug war and the prison industrial complex, how it's affected inner city youth and how that pertains to boxing. You look at that Ohio group that's coming out with Mike Stafford. Broner will talk about it, and so will Rushy Warren. They started out with like 32 guys, and they're the last two. Either the rest are dead or in jail. That's a problem. That's you know, and that's a deep problem, not just for the African American community, but with the Mexican American community and you know the white poor kids as well. It's a class thing, and what the drug war has done to this country is criminal. The people that should be put in prison are the people that keep it going. Not guys that are getting, you know, put away for 20 years to life for a couple dime bags of crank. I mean, really? It really is like a meat grinder. You know, they really just kind of throw them in. You know, it's like they call it a sausage factory. You know, of people, They put him into the prisons. They make a lot of money off of it. The courts make a lot of money off of it. The cops make a lot of money. They get bonuses for the drug arrests that they do. And you're ruining generations upon generations of families, taking away their parents, their mothers or fathers, their relatives. No family structure. And who do these kids look up to? The streets. And it just keeps going and going and going. It's the Energizer Bunny of problems in this country. So we'll be talking about stuff like that on the show. It's a great call. A great question. Yeah, I think it's
really
very
appreciate
important.
The question. Right.
Yeah,
thank you.
We got to get Tim Bradley on, but man, please call again. It's good stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. We obviously have a bunch of calls on hold on the switchboard right now. We're waiting for Mr. Tim Bradley to call in, and then we can conduct our interview with him. Don't forget to download the Apple or Android app, so you can catch all the features that we have right now, the playlist from Brandon Rios, which kid's a character, man. I mean, he's got ice, baby. You just wouldn't think, you know, from all the way down from Cypress Hill. And, you know, what's cool is we're going to have his last ring walk song on there, which we'll be putting up tonight when he went in the first match against Mike Alvarado. And we're just waiting for the completion of the second song that hasn't been released yet, the ring walk song that he's going to be going in against Mike Alvarado for the rematch on March 30th. So excited to hear those both songs on the playlist on our app. Anyways, No, he hasn't called in yet. I'm looking at the switchboard right now, waiting for him to call in.
I'm so excited. We haven't had Tim on in a while, man. And
no, we haven't.
He's in a mode of. There's one thing I got to ask him about tomorrow or tonight. Yesterday, I don't know if you've watched the press conference, but he's in the middle of it, and Bob Arum's sitting in the back, and you can kind of see this year, Todd DeBuff, who's, you know, the stepson to Bob Arum, and really the president, you know, he's kind of running things now. And there's a slow transition of the press conferences that Bob does and the ones that Todd does. And Todd has been handling this promotion, the Provodnikov Bradley promotion. And so Bob Arum's sitting in the back. He's actually sitting next to Steve Kim. I was glad because about 5 minutes before that, he was sitting next to me, and I'm glad he wasn't next to me for the awkward moment. But Tim's giving his speech, and he goes, "Hey, Bob, how's it going?" Like in the middle of his whole thing, like he's kind of rolling along, and then he just kind of stops. He's like, "Haven't seen you in a while, Bob."
I think we got Tim with us right now. Let me double check here.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yo, what up, brother?
Yo, what's happening, man?
Good, man. It's good. It's been a while since
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you good, man. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I got you guys, man.
Hey, well, welcome back. It's been a while since you've been on Leaving the Ring Radio, man. It's glad to have you back with us. You were our first guest ever when we started the show.
Right. Thanks. I appreciate that, man.
So I'm going to ask you the first question because I know Gabriel had a chance to have a one-on-one with you. What was it, yesterday? At
like
the
a
workout.
5-on-1, but yeah.
Yeah, 5-on-1.
It felt,
you know,
like a 1-on-1 at times.
It was a gangbang,
yeah.
But... let me ask you, because, you know, the change of tone and the change of kind of your demeanor of what happened after the Manny Pacquiao. You know, was that... Is that something new that's a part of you, or is that something that's always been there?
What do you mean? My tone, just how I am right now, or?
You know, like when I was listening to the interview with Gabriel, I even told Gabriel, I go, man, you know, I like what you were saying. You know, you were pretty much not holding any bars. You're not trying to be political. You know, the nice guy to me is almost, it's almost been like throwing out the door now.
Yeah, you know what? You know, everybody. What I've been realizing is, dude, after everything that I, you know, been through over the last 8 or 9 months, man, the whole Pacquiao, the backlash from the Pacquiao, and I've grown, dude. I've grown since then, dude. I've moved in a different direction now. I know what's important to me now. What's not important to me? You know, my career is very important to me. And having control of my career is very important to me. And, you know, my family is very important, man. That's you know, that's the reason why I lace up the gloves. So, you know, going through what I went through definitely made me stronger as a person. you know, I'm just different, man. I'm a little different now. I'm a little bit more outspoken. You know, I see that everybody else can say whatever they want to say anytime about me and talk about me and say whatever they want. And, you know, and no one gives them crap about it or gives them shit about it. So, you know, I say, you know what, if everybody else can say whatever they want, then you know what, I'm going to start saying whatever I want. And, you know, most of the times when I say whatever I want, I'll get a phone call. You know, Tim, don't say that. Tim, don't do this. Tim, don't do that. And then you have these other guys, you know, other fighters that are speaking out about certain things and certain people, and they're speaking bad about people. And, you know, I'm sure they don't get a phone call, you know. And I'm just like, dude, you know what, leave me alone. Let me be. You know what I mean? This is me. And you tell that other person to stop talking crap about me, and then I won't say anything bad about them. It's plain
right.
and simple. So, you know, I'm just, you know, everybody else speak their mind, so I'm gonna start speaking my mind, and that's the bottom line. And I don't care what anybody think of me. I don't care how they feel about me. I've been through a lot, dude, and you know, I'm just, you know, it's made me stronger, dude. It's made
me ask
a lot stronger.
Let me ask this, you know, because in that first match with Manny, you guys brought out the poster of the rematch, and as soon as you won that fight, the conspiracy theory came out.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back at that, you know, how much do you think that, how much of that there do you think you would want to take back? Or is that, you know what, it is what it is, it happened, but the whole conspiracy theory, come on, you know, fight fans, get over it.
Well, you know, that whole idea, you know, wasn't my idea at all. You know what I'm saying? I ran with it because, you know, they wanted me to run with it, and, you know, and that goes to show you know what I mean? Like, I have a mind of my own, and I should do what I want to do, you know what I mean? But it was just something that, you know, someone came up with, and then I was just like, oh, I'll do it, whatever, you know what I mean? I didn't really think about it too much. I just did it because I thought it would be kind of cool to do it, and, you know, I was really confident that I was going to win the fight anyway, so why not do it?
So
do you
feel like you're being used like a puppet in some sense back then?
Yeah. No more puppet here, man. You know what I mean? I'm getting more control of my career every day. I'm speaking to my promoter, you know, and Todd. I have my wife involved, you know, and also helping managing me, Cameron Duncan as well, you know, but you know, I'm in a different place now, and I feel that, you know, I need to be respected. I feel like I need to be treated like the champion. And you know what? I feel that I have demands as well. You know what I mean? If there's something that I would like, or like the anti-doping, the drug testing, you know, I was like, there shouldn't be a big deal about it. You know what I mean? I want it, and you guys should definitely get on board with me. If you guys are my promoters, you should definitely be on board with me. You know, I'm your champion. Treat me like a champion. You know, and that's the bottom line. I feel like I need respect, and I'm getting control of my career now. I feel good, you know, and I'm glad to be back in the ring on this weekend against a tough, tough fighter. And, you know, I'm ready to showcase my skills and my talent, man. I'm ready to move on. I'm opening a new chapter now in my career, in my life. And, you know, before I used to think about a lot of about everybody else's career. You know, I used to think about, oh, man, I would want to fight this guy. I want to fight this guy. I'm going to call this guy. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do, you know, and I was I was doing it all wrong. You know what I mean? I didn't really pay attention to what was going on with me. You know, yeah, I'm not sitting around waiting on Pacquiao to make a choice if he's going to fight me or not anymore. Like, dude, I waited around and waited around and waited around. All these other opponents, you know, and all these other fighters are getting fights and getting dates, and, you know, and I sat there just, like, waiting on him to make a decision, like, this is the last guy I need to fight, you know, like, you know, like, you know, I was just like, man, this is bullcrap.
Right.
What about my career? What about my career? What about my legacy, you know?
Well, let me ask you this, because, you know, he said, you know, your promoter, do your job. So you're saying they didn't do their job? I mean, what happened with the money they were offering you prior to that? I mean, was it, did you think you outpriced yourself? I mean, what do you think happened there when they did come with other, you know, possible matches for you?
No, I didn't outprice myself, man, at all. You know, the Lamont Peterson fight, the only fight that they came up with was they wanted me to fight Lamont Peterson, and I said no. I've already been down that path. I want something fresh, something new. I'm not going to come off the biggest win in my career and then go and face Lamont Peterson, who hasn't been in the ring over a year. I fought him a couple of years back. I dominated him, and now you want me to rematch him for what? That doesn't make any sense. That's just like the dumbest thing ever. Sounds so
stupid. Well, the thing that you also added yesterday, Tim, about it, that I think is, you know, the Twitter's lighting up, and they're saying, well, this is the same stuff we heard before, but the thing that you said also, because I brought up, you know, Peterson's position had changed. He'd beaten Amir Khan, but we also knew that he admitted he was on synthetic testosterone. He did it. That, to me, was really made me see your point of view in a different light.
That has a lot to do with it as well, and I was just about to say that.
It shouldn't be rewarded.
No, I was just like, man, you know, like, hey, you know, you've been out for a year. You got pop for pods. You know, with their stock phone or whatever, and you know what, like, you need to work your way back up, son. You just can't just get a shot at the belt just right away like that. Like, come on, that doesn't make any sense at all.
It's not even fair to the other guys. I mean, and you know, like Peterson would have been, Provodnikov is a guy that moved up in weight, but he's been there working, and he's actually highly ranked at 140. Whatever people think of him, it sounded like you were. Actually, before I get to that question, in line of what Dave was talking about, there was this moment in the press conference where you saw Bob and you said, what's up? And you asked him if he was still getting death threats. I assume you were getting some death threats after the Pacquiao fight, just from your comment.
Oh, yeah.
He talk about that moment a little bit? Were you pissed? It was like, it seemed like, hey,
nah.
Bob, that's the first time I saw since I beat your guy. Or was that your sense of humor? It was pretty funny.
No, I was just saying what's up to Bob, you know. I haven't seen Bob in a while, you know. Like I said, I've been working real closely with Todd DeBuff, and you know, he's been handling everything for me. So, you know, I haven't seen Bob in a while. I haven't spoke to Bob since the Pacquiao fight. I haven't seen him since the Pacquiao fight, you know. And a lot of things have been said, you know, from my side, from his side, and a lot of things, you know. I mean, everybody knows, you know, after the Pacquiao fight, what happened, and you know, a couple of things that Bob said to the media, you know, I read, and then I would, you know, we would go back and forth in the media through the media and stuff. So, but it was just good to see him. I was just like, hey, Bob, hey, how you doing, Bob? I haven't seen you in a while. You still getting death threats? Just, you know, making a joke out of it, you know, just showing people that, you know. It's all good, man. You know, Bob and I, we might not see eye to eye, you know, might not see eye to eye or whatever, but, you know, we business partners, and we got to work together.
Are you hard to satisfy, man? Let me ask you that, because, you know, one of our Twitter followers made a good point. He said, you know, you the theme of how you're sounding with Top Rank is almost the theme of how you sounded with Gary Shaw.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
no.
So,
well, the thing is that, you know, I just don't think that I was, I was more like a puppet, man, and I was just letting them control and do whatever, and you know, now that I'm actually, you know,
controlled by Top Rank. I mean, let's clear that up. You felt like you were being used by Top Rank.
What I mean is that I wasn't really forceful, man. You know what I mean? I wasn't forceful. I wasn't, you know, demanding. I wasn't, you know. And now I am. I'm like, you know, hey guys, like, make me a priority. You know, we supposed to be business partners. Make me a priority. Before, I would sit back and just be like, oh, so when am I fighting again? When am I fighting again? You know, and they, you know, they'll be like, oh, well, you know, we'll get a date for you. Is it, you know, but it wasn't, they weren't moving, you know, and, you know, so now it's like, I'm like, hey, guys, you know, you say you want to promote me, you say you can make me a superstar, then show me, you know what I mean? Show me.
I agree.
So keep me busy, get me into the ring so I can display my talent, and I want to be active, you know, I need at least 3 fights a year. And they said, okay, then. All right.
You think they were treating you almost the way fight fans were treating you? They just, that, you know, like, they didn't believe that you won that fight?
Almost like that. But, you know, it was just, what needed to happen was that we just needed to build a relationship. I think what happened after the Pacquiao fight, you know, it hit them hard, too, because It was a lot of negativity on both sides. On my side, it was a lot of negativity. I was getting a lot of heat, and they were getting a lot of heat as well as being a promoter. So it was they were trying to cover their butt, and I was trying to cover my butt. And, you know, it was just we needed to, you know, let the storm die down a little bit before we actually, you know, was able to talk and actually understand one another. You know, had a really good conversation. Todd came out to my hometown. We had some lunch with my wife and I, and we had a really good conversation and just talked, you know, and talked about my future and talked about, you know, the plans for me and, you know, the Bradley business. And I asked him, you know, I said, Todd, do you feel that you can make me a champion? Do you feel that you can make money with me? Do you feel that we have, you know, a business here? And he was like, yes, I do. Yes, I do. So I said, Todd, if you don't think that way, then, you know, you guys need to let me go, you know. And he was like, no, absolutely not. You know, he was like, no, we believe in you. You're a great fighter. You know, we think you know, what's missing to the sport. We want to promote you. We want to make you a big star. We are going to make you a big star. And, you know, he's telling me all these things. And he's just like, you know, 2013 is going to be your year, you know, and many more years to come. So, you know, it was a great conversation. It was a great meeting. And I said, okay. And, you know, a couple of things we talked, you know, he said, you let me be your promoter. You let me promote you. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you how to box, so don't tell me how to promote. I said, okay, that's a deal. I said, that's a deal. I said, you line these fuckers up and I'm going to knock them down. So he said, all right.
Speaking of knockdowns, do you think in being a superstar, are knockouts what's keeping you from being a superstar? Knockouts over the top level fighters? The Hagler at some point, who you always remind me of, kind of just said, you know what, screw it. I got to start taking people out. Is that where you're at?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm at a point now where I definitely want to start. Now, I mean, I'm sick of going 12 rounds with all these guys, man. I want to go home early, man. I'm trying to go home early, boss. I just we've been really working hard in camp and just trying to strengthen my technique. And we've been practicing a lot of technique. And the power's been showing up in, you know, sparring and you know, hitting the heavy bag. I been really pounding the hell out of heavy bag lately. And just trying to put some torque behind my punches with good technique and speed. And, it's been working.
What size do you use with the heavy bag? The big one?
Oh, like what
the
size?
The big
bag? Yeah, I use a big heavy bag, like a 250-pound heavy bag.
And because, I mean, the old school, the way to build punching power, I've always felt, is the big heavy bag. If you can move that guy, it's not so much the pads. I don't know if are you a big believer in pad work, or are you more learning about it on the heavy bag, or how do you go about it?
We just did it both, man. It was just working on, you know, full extension, turning my shoulders into my shot, turning my feet, getting my body behind my punches, shifting, you know, just basically shifting my weight from one side to the other, you know, keeping my elbows in, tucked in, you know, making sure I'm turning my punches over, turning my hook over, you know, full extension on the right hand, full extension on the jab. We just been drilling that the whole camp, dude, just from day one, man, and you know, my technique is a lot better, my punches are a lot tighter, you know, I'm not as wild as I used to be, you know, sometimes I can get really wild in the ring and just swing crazy, so, you know, this Saturday you're going to see me very composed, you're going to see some sharp punches, you know, some hard shots in there, you know, really hard body shots, and just composed, man, composed and like a seasoned veteran. And I think people's gonna like this style.
Did you see him kind of progress as you studied tape of Provodnikov? If he did, because I thought there was a big change after he helped Pacquiao prepare for you.
Yeah, absolutely. He's changed. He's adapting. You know, he's coming to his own as well. You know, he's a counterpuncher. He's a strong guy. He comes forward. He's smart. He's not, you know, dumb like everybody thinks he is. He's actually pretty smart. And, you know, he really pays attention to the body and, you know, how you move. You know, he has a really good right hand. You know, his defense is a lot better now. You know, so he tries to set up his opponents now, you know, instead of just coming forward and just swinging, you know, and trying to just apply pressure. So he's actually applying smart pressure now.
Yeah, I like this fight a lot, man. I'm going to tell you why, because, you know, even though Manny Pacquiao was supposed to be this power puncher, I never really thought he was at 147. I just saw that guy. He had great, you know, work rate. Last time you faced a guy at 147 that did have some real power, you know, in that division was with Arbogu.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that fight, and I think that this is, because, you know, everybody was like, well, you're moving to 147, oh, you know, you're not legitimate. Beating Manny and beating Arbogu and now going against the Russian kid, it just shows the, you know, how legit you are at 147. We're going to find out how legit you are, too, because you're facing another pretty big puncher here.
Right. You know, this kid, he's a big puncher. He can take a punch, you know, and he has a high work rate in the ring. And, you know, he's a dangerous guy, dude, and he's hungry. And plus, you know, he's very confident, you know, and that shows you that he, you know, I guess he has something, he sees something, or, you know, that he can capitalize on.
Something, or Freddie Roach sees something, because that's what Freddie was saying.
Freddie Roach probably sees something or whatever. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they see. I don't know what their game plan is. You know, it really doesn't matter because I'm going to shut them down, man.
I know you got to get going. You got Max Kellerman in a few minutes. Just want to ask you, because you've taken this very personal stand, and Ruslan was right there with you, about the VADA testing and just really we're watching you come as age as a champion, I think, through these 8 months, having to deal with all that criticism and then coming out on the other end and taking the stand. Can you just talk about that, about the process? Did you think it would be this hard to even get testing for your fight?
You know, I didn't think it was going to be hard, man, but, you know, it was kind of a difficult task. But, you know, once again, like I told you, you know, I'm definitely in tune with my career now. I'm definitely, you know, want to take charge. So, you know, this had to happen, you know. And the reason why I want to do the testing is because I want to start, you know, I want to show, first of all, I want to show the fans that I am clean and I am a clean champion and I have been for a long time, you know. And, you know, secondly, I just want to, you know, make sure clean the sport, you know what I mean, and make sure that all these other athletes are clean as well. And the only way that we would know is to take the test. You know, you have really strict testing policies in every other sport, you know, especially in cycling, track and field. But it was really nothing for boxing. You know, you take a piss test, and that's it. You know, what about blood doping? What about HGH? What about EPO? What about all these other, you know, drugs that you can use and that are not detectable in urine? You know, so, you know, me taking a stand and saying, you know what? Every opponent that I face, if you want to fight me, you know what? You got to take the drug test. If you're not willing to take the drug test, you're dirty, so then move to the side.
What about Memo already?
Wow.
That's the bottom line. So from here on out, everybody I face, everybody that wants to fight me will get drug tested. So if you're ever thinking about fighting me and you ever want to fight me, you better be clean because we will find out.
What about Memo Heredia, Tim? Can you clear that up? What is the relationship between you two?
With who?
The Memo Heredia is the strength coach of Juan Manuel Marquez. He's been tweeting a photo that you guys took together and kind of not saying anything, but kind of maybe intimating that you guys may be working. And I don't think you guys are. I know you guys aren't, but I thought maybe
No. It's just I seen him at one of the horse races when Marquez was fighting Pacquiao, I believe the third time. And
gotcha.
We took a photo together, and it's just a photo, a basic photo, you know, that he probably just tweeted out that we took together, and that was it. There's no relationship. He's never trained me. I've never, you know, I met him. That was the first time I ever met him, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
So he's probably just tweeting a photo, just, you know, saying that, hey, I met this kid, you know, I like this
kid. He's being a fan then. That's what he's doing. He's just being a fan.
Yeah, he's just being a fan, you know what I'm saying? So
got you.
It's nothing there.
Well, Tim, it was just awesome, as always. I really enjoyed the time you gave me yesterday and certainly the time shared here, man. I really like where you're headed at. I respect your positions and just the stand you're taking. When you, I've been trying to tell you this in person, and your wife Monica, because I know she's involved with this. I've been, you know, covering this for 3 years, and there's times where you just feel like you're alone and screaming, "Hey, we need better testing," and nobody's listening. When you announced you were doing it, man, it was awesome. I thank you for
that.
Oh,
yeah. Oh,
all right, brother.
All right, guys. Well, thank you very much, man, and check out the fight. If you're not coming out, then
check
it out on HBO. You know that, man. It's going to be a good fight, man.
Definitely. Definitely, Jeff. All right, man. Thank you again for coming on.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Timothy Bradley on Leaving the Ring, answering some questions that we had, you know, that we've been wanting to get asked. I mean, to get answered.
Oh, hey, Sweet Boxing just set up that he's going to call into the show. He'll be the 215-527 number. So keep an eye out for Ryan Bivens. I've been wanting to get him on anyways. Yeah, dude, I mean, Tim, as always, right? We've been wanting that interview for a while. The guy just, he brings honesty. Whether you agree with what he says, he brings, you know, this is how I feel. And it's interesting. I didn't want to say it to him. I don't know how, you know, they're both managed by the same guy. But him and Donaire, it's like watching them really grow into what a champion should be. Not just winning the fight and getting the belt, but all the things that come with it, handling criticism, taking a stand, kind of saying, you know what, this is my platform. This is what I'm going to fight for, like Sergio Martinez is doing with violence against women, the other causes he supports. With different guys, like, you know, Andre Ward is a very religious guy. And with Donaire and with Bradley now, it's drug testing. And they're, what I love about Tim, and I think you could do a whole interview just on the testing. And there's more on the Naked Truth episode where you can hear him kind of go more into it.
Right.
He researches, man. This is a guy that knows his body. He understands, you know, you eat Brazil nuts and drink pomegranate juice, that'll raise your testosterone. He talks all about that. He's got some great quotes about his own testosterone. It's nice to have, like, a gentleman of the sport that are also, like, leading this anti-doping movement. It's kind of badass, a guy that really can probably have the debate and find science of the body, physiology, you know, all that stuff interesting. And
I don't want to cut you off, but I want to patch in, you know, Ryan from Sweet Boxing really quick, because I got a call up once at 6:30, and then patch in our translator. So let me get Mr. Sweet Boxing himself. What's up, brother? You're on live with us.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing good, man. How you doing, brother?
Nice to talk
to you. I'm good,
man.
You know. I just got out to the gym. I was the end of the work for Hank Lundy today. He went like 20, maybe 22 rounds straight, no breaks. So he's looking in really good shape. He's going over to Ukraine, fight this bull named Victor Postol. And I think he's gonna come back with the belt. I think it's a WBC international belt or something.
Wow. He did 22 rounds straight?
Yeah, no breaks.
Oh, man, that's good.
I mean, do you think that's – well, your guy spends a lot of time in the gym, and I've seen guys would do, like, the super long round. But what do you think about sparring that much? Do you think that wears a guy out? Do you think – I mean, what level of intensity was it, for one?
Well, you know, he tuned it up on some people more than others. I mean, towards the end, he, like, by the time he got in there with me, he really didn't have the energy to, like, you know, fire much, you know, so he was, you know, mostly working on his defense with me, plus, you know, I'm several weight divisions above him anyway, so it's not like, you know, he would, you know, try to, you know, be that offensive with me, but
late in the game.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you just lulls in the action, and because, you know, some of the other sparring partners, they're not used to having no breaks either. So, you know, even though he's going straight, he's not wearing himself out too much because, you know, he's picking when he wants to fight.
Kind of teaches you how to relax, too, and how to deal with that deep water moment where you're just exhausted, but you got to keep going. You know, a gentleman we're going to have on later on, I was hanging out with Donaire's, one of his coaches, Mike Basil, up there at the Undisputed Boxing Gym, and they talked about his philosophy, like strength and conditioning, because being geared towards keeping guys' technique mentally and physically together late in the fight, when you get tired and everything starts to fall apart like a cheap suit, you know, because that's the first thing to go really in a fight is your technique. You start to get frazzled mentally, and then everything else goes with it. I found that kind of interesting, especially considering Nonito is not known as a pure technique guy.
Right.
What else you got going on out there in the gym scene? Who else have you seen recently?
Well, I've been prepping for a fight of my own, which I thought was going to be this weekend, but it looks like I get a bye or something. I might fight the next weekend after that. That's the Philadelphia Golden Gloves that I'm fighting in. But, I work with whoever I can work with. Garrett Wilson, I've worked with. I've done a couple rounds with Jesse Parr, a couple rounds with Yusef Mack. A bunch of other guys. I'm sure you wouldn't know their names, but I usually work in West Philly, but I was at Marian Anderson today. That's in South Philly.
Man, that's the way to do it, man. Sweet.
That's awesome, dude. I mean, can we at some point? I know we got to call in Ponce. I'm so curious about your story because you're so dedicated to the sport. You do all the uploading and downloading so we can do the downloading or watching things. And then you're in the gyms actually working it. You're very much an original dude. One, you provide a great service, but your knowledge is so extensive both in and out of the ring. We got to get a time in maybe later in the show tonight. We got to have this guest and we have one at 7, but I really want to hear your story. I'm very curious.
Sure.
Okay.
I'm going to put you on hold right now.
I'm going to put you on hold, but try to catch you after Gavin McMillan's interview and call back in, and we can talk a little more. I appreciate it.
All right. Yeah, I'll call back again.
All right, man.
All right.
Take care.
Let me patch in our translator, Armando. Armando, you there, brother?
Yeah. How you doing?
Doing good, man. Hey, thanks again for doing this for us. You know, you've been translator for some time now.
No problem, man.
You're officially part of the Leaving the Ring familia, bro.
That's awesome.
What's up, man?
All right, let me get Ponce in really quick, and then we can conduct our interview with him. So let me get that number up. And, dude, what an exciting fight, though, he's going to be in, man.
Man, that's going to be epic.
You know, in terms of fighting the Who's and the wins, this guy's done it. I mean, Abner Morris is up there with them, too. You know, and Ponce just keeps proving to me, the guy's just a champion in so many ways.
He's an animal, man. Like, the guy's a beast. I thought for sure that Johnny Gonzalez was gonna beat him, but he didn't. So.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of guys have wrote him off, and you got to sit back and appreciate his. Yeah. Podemos hablar con Daniel?
Okay.
You know, the skill level that he brings, you got to appreciate. You know, I mean, he's not a Floyd Mayweather, but he's got some skills that you just got to admire because it's kept him in the game for so long.
You got to love the punching power, too, man. That's
yeah.
That's freaking massive power right there.
And right now we're going to be getting Daniel Ponce de Leon. That's what we're talking
about.
And,
what's going on?
He's attaching the phone to him.
This is one of the Otter connections. Are we operating a windmill?
Bueno, Daniel.
Ajá.
Daniel, David Duendes con Gabriel Montoya aquí en Living Ring Radio.
Ajá.
Gracias otra vez para tener el tiempo para hablar con nosotros. Yo y...
¿Están ahorita vivo en el radio? ¿Ok?
Sí.
Ajá.
Yo voy a hablar en inglés, Gabriel Montoya va a hablar en español y Armando él va a hablar en español. No, Gabriel va a hablar en inglés y Armando él va a hablar en español, ¿ok?
Ok.
Ok. First off, Armando, let him know, man, thank you again. You know, one of our favorite fighters, definitely, and one of the fight fans' favorite fighters out there, for him to even take the time to talk to us, even during training camp, getting ready for his Abner Morris fight.
All right, Daniel, mucho gusto, buenas tardes, Daniel. Primero que nada, te queremos dar las gracias por tomar el tiempo y estar con nosotros en la radio. Eres uno de los boxeadores favoritos del show y uno de los boxeadores favoritos de toda la gente.
Sí. ¿Cómo? Permítame. ¿Otra vez, perdón?
¿Me escuchas, Daniel?
Sí, es que nos fue la llamada aquí, ahora sí.
Okay, que primero que nada, Gabriel Montoya, te quiero dar las gracias por estar con nosotros en el show, que eres uno de los boxeadores favoritos de toda la gente del show y de toda la gente latina de acá. So, muchísimas gracias por estar con nosotros.
Okay, gracias a ustedes por invitarme y por estar, por estoy a gusto y contento por dar la entrevista a ustedes.
Yeah, he said, okay, thank you guys so much. Thank you so much for inviting me and doing this interview with me.
Let me ask him, the name Abner Morris obviously came after when they were trying to set up the fight with Jason, the Puerto Rican kid. You know, obviously, this Morris is a much bigger reward. Did he think that fight was going to come to full light? Did he think he was going to get that fight? Was this just kind of just thrown out there and then it happened?
Daniel, antes de que se hiciera esta pelea, tenías programada una pelea en Puerto Rico, parece. ¿Tú pensabas que
sí,
esta pelea con Abner Mares iba a solidificarte?
La verdad que nunca pensé que esta pelea se fuera a dar porque, pues, nunca pensé que iba a subir de peso él. Inclusive hasta cuando estaba entrenando yo contra el puertorriqueño, al mismo entrenador de Abner Mares, que Vince Medina, estuvo mucho tiempo viniendo a verme entrenar y estuvo aquí mucho tiempo. Y pues por eso le dejamos sentar aquí a entrenar, porque nunca pensamos que se fuera a dar la pelea contra Abner.
Perfecto. He said, I never thought that the fight was actually going to happen. First of all, because I didn't think Abner was going to go up in weight. Second of all, you know, I was training for the fight against the Puerto Rican kid. And third of all, the trainer for Abner Mares was coming and helping me out with my training. And I never actually thought that the fight was actually going to solidify.
I mean, how did this come about? That's what I want to know, because you guys are both from this, almost in the same training camp, this management team. Was this just a choice of, well, we don't have any other opponents out there and we need to make a good fight for the fans?
¿Cómo pasó esto? Porque primero que nada, los dos básicamente están en el mismo campamento de entrenamiento. ¿Esto pasó porque casi no hay oponentes y querían ustedes darle una buena pelea al público? ¿O cómo es que pasó todo esto?
Sí, porque después de que Abner estaba retando a Nonito en un aire y no quisieron pelear, no hizo la pelea, después también dio a Santa Cruz lo retó y Abner no quiso pelear con él, pues me retó a mí, y pues claro, yo agarré la pelea, pues me subió el reto, yo estoy para el que sea, el que el promotor me ponga, y el promotor somos del mismo promotor y del mismo manager, así que la pelea se dio muy fácil.
Okay. He said, after Abner Mares was trying to challenge Nonito Bonilla, and that fight never happened, you know, they came to me, they knocked on my door, and I said, yeah, I'm open to fight whoever my promoter wants me to fight.
For you, you know, you've been with Espinosa Boxing for many, many, many years. For you, I mean, what does it say to you that they're willing to risk two of their best fighters and put them in against each other? You think that's just, they always make good action fights. Is that what this is to you? Is this the best possible fight?
Entonces, has estado con la misma empresa por varios años. ¿Qué es lo que te dice a ti o qué es lo que dice de ustedes que esta empresa ponga a dos de los mejores boxeadores que tiene enfrentándose a ellos mismos?
Bueno, pues eso está bien, porque somos los mejores del mundo y pues estamos ahí puestos para pelear, está bien. Lo que importa es darle buenas peleas a la afición y somos los mejores, pues tenemos que enfrentarnos entre nosotros también.
Well, we are two of the best fighters in the world, and, you know, that's what we're here for. We're here to fight for the public, and this is one of the best fights out there for the public, so that's what we're here
for. You fought some of the best fighters in the world. You're just coming off this win over Johnny Gonzalez. What does Abner Mares show you as a fighter that these other guys haven't shown you? You know, where do you rate him, I guess, among all the top fighters that you fought? Or can you not tell that until you fight him?
Daniel, has estado peleando con los mejores boxeadores en el mundo. Vienes de una pelea y una victoria muy importante contra Johnny Gonzalez. ¿Qué es tú lo que crees que trae Abner Mares que no traigan los otros boxeadores? ¿Eso es algo que nos puedes decir?
Bueno, él es un boxeador que técnicamente se mueve bien y es rápido y pues está invicto. así que pues es una buena pelea. Yo he peleado con peleadores invictos, también peleadores fuertes, y pues estoy acostumbrado a este tipo de peleadores, así que si está invicto, si está como sea, no importa, yo estoy listo para pelear, para pelearle y para darle.
Well, he's a boxer that's he's super technical. He's one of the most technical fighters out there, and I fought. He's undefeated as well. I fought a lot of fighters that are undefeated and that are very technical as well. And I'm ready for him, whether or not he's ready.
Has he ever sparred with Abner? I mean, just being in so close in camps and manager team, have they ever mixed it up?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the question again. It's kind of dated.
Ask Monse, has he ever sparred with Abner Morris?
Oh, ¿quieres saber si alguna vez has estado haciendo sparring con Abner Morris?
Ha sido, así hicimos sparring, pero hace mucho tiempo, hace 2-3 años, hicimos sparring con él.
He said that they did spar, but it was like maybe like 3 or 4 years, 2 or 3 years ago, so it's a long time.
Tell him to give us his assessment from 3 years ago of Abner Morris and of the kid now. Of today, what is the difference from 3 years to now?
Quiero saber si nos puedes dar algún tipo de conocimiento que tú tenías acerca de Abner Morris hace 3 años y cómo él ha evolucionado.
Pues sí, cuando yo estaba con él, pues estaba apenas peleando contra Birda Chin, en así, pues, era zurdo, yo le ayudé para pelear contra él, que era zurdo, y pues sí me acuerdo bien el estilo de él, pero siempre cambian. Ahora hace tiempo de eso, pienso que ahora es pues ha mejorado más.
Okay. He said that he helped him to fight against Vic Darchanian, because the Vic Darchanian was a left fighter, southpaw fighter, and he helped him train for that fight, because he's also himself a southpaw fighter. But he said that he's improved a lot now in his technique.
Let me ask him, what's his prediction with this fight? You know, does he think he's going to stop him, or does he think this is going to be a technical fight of what he's seen the way Abner Morris has been carrying himself in the ring?
¿Quieres saber cuál es su predicción para esta pelea? ¿Tú piensas que lo vas a poder ganar por knockout, o tú piensas que va a ser más una pelea más técnica como usualmente Abner Morris hace sus peleas?
Pues como él venga, yo lo voy a pelear yo, pero sí, mis puños están muy duros y pues yo lo voy a golpear duro. Si cae, no sé, me puedo lastimar, pero lo va a dar duro, lo va a pegar fuerte, aunque yo sé que él está muy duro, no me quiero confiar por eso, porque él está más chico que yo. Estoy preparándome muy bien para pelearle.
Okay. He said he's going to hit him hard. He's ready for whatever Abner Morris brings in, but he's going to hit him hard, and if he gets him, he's going to put him down, but he knows that he's not going to have overconfidence, because Morris is a little bit smaller than him. But he's going to hit him hard.
All right, man. Hey, tell him thank you again for taking the time, and we wish him all the luck, and can't wait to speak to him again.
Okay, Daniel, muchísimas gracias por tomarte el tiempo, y no podemos esperar por volver a platicar contigo, tal vez después de la pelea. Muchísima suerte y muchas gracias de nuevo por tomar el tiempo.
Ok, muchas gracias, te agradezco, pues aquí estamos a la orden.
Gracias, he said, thank you guys so much, thank you so much for the interview.
Ok, gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Ponce is a bomb.
Yeah. How about that? I'm going to hit him hard.
I think he
just tells it how it is. I'm going to hit him hard, and then we'll go from there and see what happens. Armando, thank you again, brother, for taking the time and doing this translation for us, bro. Much appreciated.
No problem, guys. No problem. Thank you, guys. Good luck. Bye-bye.
Thanks, man. Daniel Ponce de Leon here on Leaving the Ring. I like his answers. You know, guys just, you know, almost cutthroat the way he throws his punches and stuff, you know, just right there to the point. You're not going to waste any time, you know, and he's at his gym. I know he owns his own gym, so I'm not sure if he was working out or if he was working, you know?
Dude, Linus, chill out. He's got a hater streak when it comes to Donaire. He gets really angry. Dave, correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't last year we were talking about Donaire should face Rigo when he's going through his boring fight stage?
Yeah,
we were talking about it, and they were saying that he was avoiding him. That's a fact. That was a news thread. Whether it was imagined, you know, the way the media kind of runs with things, and they think this is happening, they get all excited, but that did happen. that did exist. And Donaire's giving me, as a boxing writer, I think my opinion actually does matter. People do actually, in the position to make fights, ask my opinion about what fights I want to see. One of those fights is Kirkland Angulo, and this one is another one. I've been asked my opinion before, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I'd like to think I'm a pretty good matchmaker. And in this case, Donaire Rigondeaux, it's a dangerous fight. It could end up being kind of a funky fight, sort of like Vargas versus Wale Omotoso happening this weekend. That could be an explosive fight. It could also be a stinker. And with Donaire, and I really do get the sense, at least the people around him do get the sense, that Rigo could turn out, at least to the body, could turn out Donaire's lights like that. One or two shots and see him hurt and finish him. The way he finished Rico Ramos, and Rico Ramos, he's no Nito Donaire, but he's one of those athletic guys that uses original technique as opposed to just straight punches and true technique. Rigo's a dangerous man. I don't care what anybody says. This fight was asked for at a certain point. Then the Morris train kind of built after that, or the Morris train was a little more of a through line with maybe a pit stop in Rigo land. But those aren't artificial narratives. I really resent being called a PR person or a top-ranked shill anytime people disagree with what I have to say as it pertains to one promoter or another. I think my track record speaks for itself that I keep it real. So let's just ease off of that. It's like it's a child's debate anyways. You're attacking me as opposed to the argument. It has no place in intelligent debate unless you have no more bullets in your gun, which you don't in this case. So I'm looking forward to the fight. I'm looking forward to, Dave, actually, because I was looking over that interview. I think it needs a little bit of editing that I will do and send to you. But the Donaire interview, I think, should be episode 2 of The Naked Truth, because it's another 30-minute interview where we sit down and talk about all manner of things, his work with Victor Conte, his strength coach, Remy Korchemny. There's a little section, he covers a wide section of things. We talk about fatherhood. Or his impending fatherhood that he's going to have, him and Rachel Donaire, his wife, they're going to have a child. And that's you can just see it on his face how things have changed. Like I said, him and Tim Bradley, watching these guys, it's watching two champions. I mean, Nonito got Fighter of the Year. I think Tim, on some level, we didn't really ask him. Maybe he felt that he was a candidate, you know, that he should have been in that mix. And instead, he's kind of got pushed to the side. And I don't understand why the nice guys get pushed to the side. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. We talk a little bit about it in the interview that people are going to hear on the show. So download the app, and Dave, get to work. Finish it.
No, I know I got to finish it. I'm going to end up finishing it tonight and then send it over to Stephanie from Scotch Mob. You know.
I'm going to go on a rant. Just start working on it. You know,
we're going to be – right. You know, you wanted the dark cloud. You got the dark cloud, buddy.
Why people are so down on Donaire. I mean, and I was critical. I think I've been pretty consistent with him. And it's not like...
You know, I'm going to tell you the truth. I've been down on Donaire, and you know I have. You know, we've had our off discussions off the radio, and I've had my rants about no needle here. But I did say, you know, and I'm not going to take back what I've said before. I said, if the Rigondeaux fight happens, I'm not going to be mad. That is a good fight. It is a dangerous fight. So... I was majorly disappointed the Abner Morris fight didn't come through? Man, you're damn right I was.
But you know what? In that interview that we'll release on there, I'm not going to give it away, but we address it. We address what his agenda is. And it's very clear. And there's a big difference between talking to a guy on the phone, although I really like talking to Tim on the phone, specifically, you know, after talking to him for so long in person and really getting to connect, you know, in person. I mean, I think over time, you know, it's a lot of people don't usually put the face to the voice. You know, sometimes they come on the show and they're like friends of the radio show and they're super friendly with us here. But then in person, they kind of look at you and like they're trying to remember. You know, athletes talk to so many people, so they don't always know. I think Tim's finally realizing that the guy, that skinny Mexican dude that keeps talking to him in person is the same guy that's on the show. And he's known you for, I mean, he calls you Dave, you know, he knows who you are exactly. And so that rapport is deepening. And I think as that happens, the interviews get better, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and this is my thing, you know, and I think Blindness hit something that I have to agree on is with Twitter. And I think that's what some of my resentment was with Nonito, is that I couldn't take the tweeting. Like most fighters, like Andre Ward, I got to be honest, guys, I unfollowed him for a reason. I couldn't take the tweeting anymore, you know? And the shot from Floyd Mayweather.
Which one? Oh, that. Yeah.
That one there, in some ways, it was going to spark. Look, some folks are going like, I can't believe Floyd and is taking a shot at Andre Ward. He's a good guy. But I got to tell you this. I think Floyd kind of helped him out a little bit. Got his name out there again. Is getting his name out in public, because a lot of fight fans that are not, they're the casual fans, okay? They're the guys that only follow Floyd. They're going to go, well, who's this guy that, you know, Floyd Mayweather's blasting? And here's the thing, though, is that I haven't...
Well, I think this is kind of part of the problem. And, you know, there's some people that are kind of happy that the number one fighter in the world, Floyd, is taking shots at, arguably, in terms of pound for pound, the number two pound for pound fighter, who also happens to be an African American, whose image is exactly the opposite of Floyd's. Floyd took umbrage with the nickname, starting off, of Andre Ward, Son of God. Now, really, if you're a Christian, you're all sons of God. So it doesn't really matter. And you're actually all kind of one. It's really what all religions say, but, like, you know, Christianity kind of breaks it up into Father, Son, Holy Ghost. You know, if I don't know about regular Christianity, but certainly like the Catholic Church believes in like the Holy Trinity, right? But ultimately the message is that we're all kind of one. Why they divide it up and then tell you that we're all one, I have no idea, which is why I'm not part of the church anymore. But what Floyd was doing was like taking shots at his image and kind of, I think in a veiled way, in a Floyd kind of way, saying he's not who you think he is.
I think so too. Honestly, I think that's exactly what he was doing. He was doing two things. One, he was giving them some publicity. Two, he was basically saying, I don't think he's really genuine in who he is. And you know what? It's sad to say, but there's a lot of fight fans that do feel that way. You know, get turned off. Nobody wants their boxing mixed with their religion.
But doesn't everybody do that? I mean, Floyd thanks his God, Al Haymon, like every time. When he calls himself money, you know, that's just God.
But here's the thing is that fight fans, they pick and choose what is right and what is wrong at the spur of the moment. No, at the moment. You know what I mean? I think that's what it comes down to is that, you know, speaking as a fight fan, we praise you when you're doing it right, and we don't praise you when you're doing it wrong. You know what I mean? It's easier to kick a man down. We see it all the time on Twitter, on Facebook. It's easier to kick a man down while he's down.
Well,
and I'm not saying Ward is down, but with the injury, and really there's nothing out there for him. Think about it, 168. Who's he going to fight? Who's out there for him to really make the amount of money and exposure that he needs right now? Really nobody. I'm not disappointed with the Bernard Hopkins saying that, you know, no amount of money, because that is great marketing right there. He was making fans go, what? This fight's never going to happen? Are you serious? It's got to happen. It just made fight fans now go, I want to see this fight. Great marketing. The old man still got tricks. Whether or not if it's PDs or HGH helping out those tricks, we don't know. We'll find out. Hopefully, we'll find out.
I just think, here's the thing. You know, with Floyd, whether it's true or not, I don't know. I think you can only know a guy so much through an interview, you know? So you don't know. I don't know Floyd. I don't know Andre. You know, I know Andre a little more than I know Floyd. I wouldn't even deign to think that I know Floyd at all personally. We've had a personal altercation. We know each other in a sense, but not, you know, it's more like adversarial reporter and fighter. But with Andre, you know, I've broken bread next to him. I've talked with him at length. We've talked privately. And I feel, you know, there's something there, but regardless of all that, isn't it what we were talking about earlier about the African American community and how, you know, since Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, all the black leaders, Ali, who fell silent to his disease, they
lost
their great black leader. And so shouldn't like the top black fighter not be kicking sand in the religion and the face of the guy right below him, who's in a way of an heir apparent, who won gold where Floyd didn't win gold? Shouldn't he be raising him up instead of calling them a fraud? What does that help?
It doesn't help. But I'm just giving you a perspective of what fans, what, you know, fans, some fans see. And you know what? And I go back to saying this, you know, this is a primitive sport. You know, it's a caveman sport. And we act like cavemen at some times, you know. And with Floyd, like I said, it's in some way he got Andre's Ward. He did a service for Andre Ward, get his name out there. Because it was like, wow, I can't believe you would say something like that, Floyd. But Ward has always praised you. He's said it numerous times, you know, I'm looking to be like, you know, Floyd Mayweather, undefeated, look good, and, you know, not get touched.
Yeah, Andre's always given praise to Floyd. He's always given praise to Floyd.
That's what
I'm
saying.
He's actually been on here, I believe, or certainly in conversations we've had.
He's done it on here. He's done it on interviews with me one-on-one, and that's what I'm saying. That's what I was kind of taken back, like, wow, I can't believe that Floyd was taking a shot at a guy that's praised his career. But I think too, there's a bit of jealousy.
Shocked by Floyd not being classy is like saying, "Wow, it's hard to believe a guy that took care of him so much, like Elvis, you know, would die so suddenly." You know, like Floyd always acts this way. He's a kind of a toxic person. The Manny Pacquiao rant. He's kind of impulsive, and he also seems to kind of like look at the way he always announces fights, or used to around the time of a Pacquiao fight. He couldn't quite handle anybody else getting attention. And it's not like Andre Ward's getting the most attention on the planet right now. He's coming off an injury. He's just entering the gym. That was like the news. And then all of a sudden this shot out of nowhere.
I think that was a shot that's been he's been holding in his, you know, and I think there's a shot that he's been holding in because
it says more about Floyd than it does about Andre.
Right. But I go back. Yeah, I think that shot was taken because you hit it on the nose that he has a goal. Andre Ward has a goal. Floyd doesn't. That's got to hit his ego just a bit. Here's another thing. Andre Ward is doing commentating. Why hasn't Floyd been asked this? He might be asking that question. Like, why is this guy getting those perks? And I'm not.
I don't know if he was ever asked to sit there and commentate. I like Andre Ward as a commentator. I think it's – they still need – there's something missing right now with HBO commentary. And I think it's – for me personally, it's Max Kellerman. I would replace that seat. He kind of parrots what the other guys say. He doesn't really offer me anything that's of new information. I always like the conversation that Andre Ward is having with anybody other than Max Kellerman.
Kind of like the fight game?
Max's part, I just kind of like, I don't really care what he has to say. You know, he's just kind of a guy to me. Whereas I actually like the fight game. I like Jim Lampley.
I like the fight game, but you know, when we talk about being walking away feeling educated or feeling like, you know, we got something a little more that we didn't know about, I hate to say it, I walk away still with an empty feeling, and I'm not full.
Well, I think what it
like
is
Chinese
is that
food.
It rises and falls the fight game if on his ability to either cover a story that we haven't covered more thoroughly, also. It rises and falls on whether or not how much you value the opinion of the people that are on it. Because what you're watching is, this is Jim Lampley's take on the stories of the week, the things that he considers, you know, that are important. Like he's following up with Margaret Goodman and Vada going forth and doing giving a talk at a major convention in boxing. Those things are important. But yeah, do you value Max Kellerman's breakdown of the week? Do you want to hear him talk? I don't miss him from ESPN. So no, the answer is no. And I don't really like listening to him during fights. I mean, there's nothing against him as a guy. I just – he never really teaches me anything that I don't know, and his voice kind of bugs me. So I'd rather listen to Andre Ward and Jim Lampley. And I think the fight game – you got to look at it like a regular series because he only had 4 episodes last season. And this is the first one. I think it was the best one. Think about most regular seasons, even like the greatest series of all time or sitcom of all time, that people arguably Seinfeld. It took like 6, you know, 7, 8 episodes – for them to
it
find
took
out
a whole season, and
the yeah, they
know
did
that
the first
season
they
didn't do very
funky.
Well, right?
Exactly. So I'm going to give them 6 episodes to find his stride. They had a very short season, and it's probably hard to get where he wants to go. But I expect it, you know. And I think Kevin Ioli should smile more. He has a nice smile, and he's just he's a little tight. He's much more warm than that.
It's hard to smile when you have no lips, Gabriel.
Wow. Oh, be nice to Kevin.
I know. I'm just kind of jokes to jokes. And not, again, I like the fight game. I'm just saying that, you know, when I'm done with it, let me just say this. You know, my attention span is very short. And if you don't catch it within those 3 to 5 – my attention span just left.
Oh, that's Zahir Rahim. Yeah, exactly. Zahir Rahim is speaking of left and come back. Zahir Rahim will be in the house in just a moment.
He will be in the house. I'm going to be giving him a call right now.
He's got to be so excited.
You know, really quick. Again, if you haven't downloaded the app on Apple or Google, you need to just type in all capital letters, LIITR Boxing, or the full name, Leave It in the Ring. Check out the new features we got. We definitely have the playlist right now, thanking Brandon Rios and Nancy. Nancy was his publicist that helped us get this together. As always, Scotch Mob, man, they're a beast. They do the impossible, and they make it possible. And they put on their Brandon Rios' playlist so that you can get in tune of what he listens to at his workout sessions while he's preparing for his rematch on March 30th against Mike Mile High Alvarado. We're gonna be putting some other fighters on there too. We're not gonna make the announcement yet, but this is what I'm stoked about is that we get to hear Brandon Rios' Ring Walk song before it's out anywhere else on the app. So you get to hear what he's gonna be coming out to when he faces Mike Alvarado in a very anticipated, violent, hopefully it's gonna be more violent than the first one, rematch with Mike Mahai Alvarado. So go and download your Leave in the Ring mobile app. We're also going to be releasing The Naked Truth with Mr. Gable Montoya. And then shortly after that, The Boxing Blitz with myself and the co-host of The Boxing Fix. But no longer, he's going to be my co-host on The Boxing Blitz. So let's call in Zahir Rahim here on Leave in
so
the Ring.
So excited. We've got some questions for him, but we do have to kind of burn through it. We also got Gavin McMillan, who's with Sports Science Lab. He's one of the top strength conditioning coaches in sports, and he's going to be working with Ruslan Provodnikov. And he'll be joining us at about 7:15. So we've got to get this, you know what I'm talking about.
Hello?
Yeah, can we please speak to Zahir Rahim?
Yes, speaking.
Hey, brother, this is Dave Duenas and my partner, Gable Montoya, with Leave the Ring Radio.
Yes, sir.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. You know, actually, when Matt texted me, I was excited, man, because you know what? I've been wanting to speak to you for quite some time.
Wow, man, that's that's good. I'm excited to hear that.
Hey, you know, well, first off, I know you're making a comeback, and like most fans, they're basically going to ask, why? Why are you making a comeback?
You said, why did I?
Yeah, why are you planning to make a comeback?
Well, I've been constantly in the gym. You know, I have a gym. I own a gym in Stone Mountain, Georgia, and I'm always in the gym, always training, and I've done a couple exhibitions, and, you know, I'm just constantly fighting, you know what I mean? And I've been feeling good, looking good, and I'm just, you know, been sparring a lot of these young killers, man, and they can't touch me. And I'm like, man, wait. I'm not going to let this talent go to waste.
Let me ask you this, because we've been talking about this subject here on Leave the Ring for the past 2 hours. We had a caller call in talking about black fighters not getting the respect or the exposure that they should. After beating Eric Morales, do you think that not just alone because he was leading to a big mega fight with Manny Pacquiao, but do you think there had a lot to do because of the fact that you were a black fighter and the support the Americans don't have for American fighters didn't help you out in any?
Well, I'm gonna put it like this, you know, we can always pull the black card, oh, black fighter, you know, we don't look that good, but at the end of the day, it's all about money. And the card was sold for Manny Pacquiao and Morales as a doubleheader for them two to fight each other. It was sold as a tournament. The winners fight each other. Do you actually think they're going to actually bypass that multi-million-dollar event for me? Do you think that half of those audience would have came out for me and Morales? Probably not. Dollars make sense.
So let me ask you this. So when you sign off for that contract, you signed on to a dead contract knowing already that even if I beat this guy, it's not going to lead to anywhere?
No. When I signed the contract, I signed to fight Eric Morales. the way that they promoted it was different than what the contract said. They promoted it as a tournament, but that contract was just a paper between me and Eric Morales. Period. It wasn't a rematch clause. It wasn't as a winner want to fight Pacquiao. That's just the way that they sold it on TV. But it wasn't in the contract. Now, I didn't know that they were going to promote it that way.
Now, is that something that you dropped the ball on, or your team, your lawyer, your management team? Or did you even have any of that right there to back you up so you knew what you were putting in?
Well, I had a manager, and my manager was Cameron Duncan. Cameron Duncan worked for Top Rank. You know, I mean, behind the scenes, if you say, you know, legally he doesn't, but he did. And that was my manager. So, I mean, you know, he came to me with the fight that I want to fight Eric Morales. I said, yes. So, I mean, you know, I was in the shark tank.
Definitely, yeah.
Well, let's get into this is Gabriel Montoya. I'm a writer with Max Boxing and Dave's co-host here on Leave It in the Ring. It's a pleasure to talk to you, man. It's a trip. You it was like you hit the Bermuda Triangle. You won. You really outclassed Eric Morales, and then you had a tough fight with Freitas, but you were off for like a year. Can you talk about that period before you got to the Freitas fight, which was a tough fight? I mean, it wasn't. It's a historically kind of ugly fight. It's just a bad style matchup. And just where things kind of went from there for you and what led you to here?
Well, I'm going to tell you, for that Freitas fight, man, it was an ugly fight. And I watched it and I seen, wow, you know, and I had a lot of ring rust on. I was off for a year after Morales fight. It was because after I beat Morales, I was upset of not having the Pacquiao fight. And my promoter Tyler at the time said, no, we'll give you a fight. You can go to Puerto Rico to fight Jose Cotto. I turned that fight down. I said, why would I go to Puerto Rico to fight Jose Cotto? That don't make no sense to me. I was supposed to be fighting Benny Pacquiao. Make a long story short, I went to put the details out here all day. They got upset and put me on the shelf and said, you turned down a fight.
Wow.
Then our Peludo came to my manager, Cameron Duncan, and offered that fight for Freitas in Connecticut at the casino where they had a deal at. And that's how that happened. Now, as of today, you know, like I said before, man, I'm excited. I'm in great condition right now, man, and I'm excited to fight next weekend.
You've been off for a while. You've been off for 3 years. What have you been doing in the meantime? And as you headed into the fight, I mean, have you just been pretty active? I mean, boxers don't I was talking to like a young Olympic boxer, Marlena Sparza, the other day. She's our first female Olympic gold or a bronze medalist, first person to medal. And she said, like, I'm going to go for the next Olympics because I want the gold. And someone told me, you don't want the gold. It's boxing. You'll find out when you get the gold that the addiction is boxing. Is that how it is for you in these 3 years? You still stay involved and you're just chasing something.
I think you are correct on many different levels. And I mean, I have to be honest. I mean, you are, but I can definitely say this, that, you know, it's not about, I'm not chasing the money. The money comes great. I mean, I'm fine. You know, financially, you know, I'm fine. I'm doing it because I can. If I had a job and, I was working and had to train. I probably wouldn't do it. It'd be too much. I have a family, but I'm fine financially now. If you know, I'm not putting that much pressure on myself. I'm doing it for the love of it, and I believe I have it, and the loved ones around me, and the trainers and managers, people that I have behind me, believe in me as well as I believe in myself. Now, the last 3 years, I done had 5 exhibitions, 2 without having a 3 with in front of the audience. You know what I mean? So, to me, that's a fight in front of, you know, 1,500, 2,500 people. You know, when you're
hitting him with the fight, you know.
Huh?
Somebody hitting him in the face, it's a fight. It is a matter of, you know, if it's an exhibition or it's a real fight, right?
Yeah, and I mean, guys with credible workers. Like, last guy I just fought, you know, without the headgear, he was 28-2. And this guy, I can't remember his freaking name. He just signed a Golden Boy. And, I mean, you know, I'm not in there, you know, with Draymond and that. I mean, I'm actually doing it, but at the same time, you know, if I get knocked out in there or I get my behind with, you're going to hear about it. You know what I mean? But since I'm going to whoop him, you know, it doesn't matter because, you know, it ain't on TV, you're not here, right? You're supposed to do that. You know what I mean?
So, you know, and then
I'm going to tell you, you know, for a while, a year ago, I've been looking for fights and trying to get fights. Nobody would fight me or the promoters wouldn't put me on the card. I was having a little trouble for a while.
Yeah, I mean, man, you were having a lot of trouble and stuff. When we talk about Issa Sae Smith or Winky Wright, you were right in line with those guys, you know, not able to get back into the ring or back in the bird eye view of fans.
Yeah, man, it was like, I don't know, it was weird, man. It was like nobody wanted to just dare touch me at all. Nobody wanted to deal with me. As far as promoters giving me fights, and, you know, it was ugly, man. It was ugly. And then the bad part about it, even if I went to... If I went to local promoters, and since I cut the guy, when I got with local promoters to get on the card, and I said, don't worry about the money, I just want to fight. You know what I ended up hearing? Oh, okay,
what?
We can do it. In the last minute, they want to tell me, oh, your opponent won too much money. That happened to me 6 or 5 times.
Oh,
wow.
Man. Hey, tell us about your gym, man. What's the name of it, where it's located? Is it an open public gym, or... Is this, you know, strictly?
No, I have a 5,500 square gym. It's inside of a Stone Branch Plaza. It's inside of a plaza right next to a dollar store and a Mexican restaurant and a shooting range. And I have one half of it is a dance studio where they do Zumba over there, kickboxing classes and.
Nice.
Things like that on that side, and hip-hop fitness and things like that. I got a class going to do on the boxing side.
Damn.
And I have a boxing side with, you know, weight equipment. And I have my Instagram and Facebook, you know, pictures of it. You know, a nice gym there, and I got a playground I built in the back. I got a after-school program in there. For after school, I got a cafe inside of it to sell, you know, protein shakes, coffee, things like that. If you want to sit down, lounge, and read books and watch, you know, whoever you got in there train, and things of that nature, man. So, you know, it's a very nice facility, man. When I opened the gym, I wanted to make it something outside of a clean, stinking gym, the everyday boxing gym. I wanted to make it more like around the lines of, like, a Bally / Starbucks and a dance studio where you can hang out, watch TV at the same time, you know, watch the dance or the boxing.
Yeah, it sounds like you've done really well. Yeah,
I want to come hang out of your gym.
Exactly, you know.
You come in and you might not come out.
The only thing I was waiting for was you to mention saying that Victor Ortiz was down there, you know, practicing for his Dancing with the Stars, man.
it's funny you said it because I've been planning on opening up a training camp down because you know I'm right next to Stone Mountain. And you know that mountain is a beach, man, for running and training. You know what I mean? It is phenomenal.
Where are you located at? I didn't catch that part of it.
The gym is at 1900 Bridge. It's in Stone Mountain, Georgia.
Stone Mountain, Georgia. Okay.
Okay.
It's about 30 minutes from Atlanta.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Right outside of Atlanta.
I haven't actually been out to that part of the country, but if I ever do, that sounds like the gym that I train at. No, never have. Never have.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
we got to make that trip over there, you know? At least see some.
Yeah, come on, open the door.
I'll
put the red carpet out for you guys, man. Anytime, it's shit. You got my number. Just call me and give me the heads up.
Yeah, just don't put no dancing shoes on me, bro. I got 2 left feet.
now, myself, on the other hand, I can shake a tail feather like James Brown, so.
Don't believe it. Don't believe the hype there, you know? Hey, man, so up. We want to, you know, wish you all the best in the world with your comeback fight. We got to get you back again on Leaving the Ring Radio. Thanks for just taking the time, man, and speaking to us here.
Really, man, thank you very much, man. I'm one of your number one fans. Thank you very much. I look forward to being on again.
Oh, absolutely. We'll get you on extended. We have another guest coming up in like a couple minutes. We Dave and I kind of overbooked today, so we're kind of like flying through the interviews. But man, I mean, it's nice to really hear that you're doing well. You've always, you know, you're one of the great skilled practitioners, a guy that's just a beautiful boxer. And it's interesting because we had Tim Bradley on earlier. He beat Pacquiao, got that decision, and here he is. He didn't fight for a year. It was like, what's going on with Top Rank and the brothers?
Hey, the same thing happened to Peterson. I mean, look at them. You see them guys on ESPN at least every month. every other month. They got with Top Rank. You know, one fell, you never see one ever again. And then the other one, you know, he have his little issues and never the same.
Why are African American fighters not? Why can't we promote them? What happened?
Hey, well, I'm gonna tell you, and I'm gonna be totally honest. I personally believe, man, it's because of the KKK. Nah, I'm joking. Nah, I'm joking, man. But you know what I really think it is. No, I'm joking. Yo, I'm gonna tell you what I really think it is, man. I think it's a unity thing, honestly. And I'll tell you why. You can have a guy, man, that could be Hispanic and let's look at Trinidad Oscar De La Hoya, okay? If you took one of them guys and you put them in Philadelphia and they fought, man, every Hispanic in the city would come out. And that's a huge population of Hispanics in Philadelphia. I grew up in a Puerto Rican neighborhood. Now, I'm going to tell you this. Look at Bernard Hopkins. After he won that tournament with Don King, Don King was throwing him a fight in Atlantic City. Bernard Hopkins told Don King, no, look, I want to fight in Philadelphia.
Right.
Don Keith said, no, let's fight in Atlantic City. He knew because he could generate more revenue inside the casinos host, with the casino, you know, crowd coming in. He knew he'd make more money. So they made an agreement. Don Keith said, okay, well, I'm going to take an $80,000 deduction out of your B-Hop, Bernard Hopkins said, okay, let's do it. He went to the convention center in Philadelphia, man, and took a hell of a loss and said, I ain't never do it again. Next time he fought, it was probably 6 years later. Now, mind you, he just won the junior major middleweight tournament that they had. He didn't beat Wendy White. He didn't beat Trinidad. I mean, this guy to beat everybody already. So,
right.
Bro, why didn't anybody come out to support him? Now, if you'd have put Oscar De La Hoya inside Philadelphia, he would have sold the convention out. And I'm just making a point. When you tell African American, it's not because they don't fight well. It's about unity. African American people, I guess, are not supporting and spending the money.
It's something we talked about earlier on the show with I don't know if you paid much attention to it, but like Floyd Mayweather yesterday, I believe, made the statements just dogging out Andre Ward, making fun of his soldier, you know, son of God nickname. And we were just saying, why would you, if you're the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world, African-American guy, you know, really rags-to-riches story, and the number two guy is an African-American who's well-spoken, man of the church, his nickname is son of God, and here you are just kind of airing it out and trashing him instead of raising him up. What is that?
Lack of unity. Again, there you go again.
Yep.
You know, supporting unity, man. You know, and that's just, I don't know, man. You got to think about when slaves, before slaves came to America, they were divided and conquered in Africa. And that curse still lives on today here in America. It's ferocious.
Yeah. It goes back to that, right? The guys in the house and the guys in the field.
There you go. They still fight up.
It is. Wow.
That's the truth.
It is, man.
True.
I still remember when Bernard Hopkins, you know, he stops, you know, Trinidad. He jumps on the ropes and he starts saying USA, and he was trying to get everybody to say it with him. And like the rest of the brother was like, nah, man, it's just too many Puerto Ricans in here, dog.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, man. Hey, again, brother, thanks for having me.
Yeah,
thanks for coming on, bro. It's a great
interview. Hey, man, it's been a pleasure, man. I look forward to meeting you.
See, like an hour-long interview in our future, I have to say, as I hear. We're doing a show called The Naked Truth where we tackle issues, and this is one that I really want to talk about is the effect of, like, the prison-industrial complex, the drug war on the African-American community, and as it pertains to all kinds of things but boxing. I'd love to talk to you about that.
Hey, man, I would love to. Anything. I'm with
okay.
it. The Naked
you.
Truth. That sounds good to me.
All right,
let me ask you really quick before I let you go, because a lot of our listeners are asking, do you have a Twitter account, Facebook? How can they find you and interact?
I don't have a Twitter. I have a Facebook, an Instagram, MySpace.
Okay.
Okay, can you throw that out there really quick?
It was just all
King Ryan. Well, I got King Ryan Boxing and Cross Training on Instagram. For Facebook,
okay.
Is Zahir Raheem.
Well, we're gonna follow you.
King Raheem. I'm sorry, for Facebook.
We're gonna follow you, brother. Thanks again, man, for taking the time.
Thank you, man. I look forward. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Unity. That's it. As you know.
It's as cut and dry as you can get right there. You know.
As Dave Chappelle, as Rick James said, unity. That's what it's all about, you know?
Yeah.
We've got to call
like
in Gavin McMillan.
I didn't know you had that. You could hit that note.
Oh, I can hit that, too.
Josh McDaniel, who will be my co-host with on the Boxing Blitz, he's going to be with me. Josh McDaniel, you all know Big Tree. You love Big Tree. Mm. Everybody loves the Big Tree.
It's true. It's very true. You always feel a little safer with a Big Tree kind of giving you shade, you know?
Yes,
I do. I'm like, I'm with the big white guy. Do not mess with me.
The only time...
pick me up and throw me at people.
The only time I get scared of the tree is when we go sit down and eat. No, he's going to take my plate away. Just kidding, Josh. Don't switch me.
And we are live. That's funny.
Hello, it's Gavin.
Hi, Gavin. This is Gabriel Montoya with MaxBoxing.com and LeaveItInTheRingRadio.com. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Duenas, and we're scheduled for our interview, so we are live. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
For those tuning in, I want to, you know, what we do with every fighter, every source there, or guest that comes on the show, we kind of just have them introduce themselves and we get into their background. For those just tuning in, you're working right now with the welterweight challenger to Tim Bradley, Ruslan Provodnikov. But could you give us a little bit of your background? I was really, I've been looking through your website and researching you, and you've worked with some really amazing people, man. So how did you get started? Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, I've been pretty lucky with people that I've been able to, you know, train over the years, and I feel very, you know, blessed in that way. It's been a really fun, you know, job to have. I mean, I was an athlete myself. I grew up playing hockey in Toronto and a lot of other sports, and it's really what kind of led me into this business. And, you know, realizing that, you know, the commitment it takes to be a professional athlete and the dedication and the amount of work and all the other things that have to go right for someone to succeed, you know, it's fun to be a part of a process like this for somebody like Ruslan. And it's pretty amazing how, you know, the thing we call athletics or sports competition or whatever, how universal it is in terms of, you know, the people that you can get, you know, in this sport. I mean, Ruslan's just a very dedicated athlete. He's completely focused on what he's doing. He's been a real pleasure to work with. He's extremely coachable. I'm sure Freddie would say the same thing. And, you know, it's just been a really easy, smooth process. And, you know, my company has been training athletes for about 12 years, specifically in certain ways, but I've been involved in coaching for over 20 years now. So, you know, it's been a long road, but I love doing it.
How do you, because you know, he's been kind of, I call it like stacking, as far as he went to the wild card from Russia and was getting that mm-hmm. level of experience. Then he kind of mm-hmm. impressed Freddie and got to work with Freddie and Pacquiao. So that mm-hmm. was like stacking to another level. Now mm-hmm. he's added you after several fights mm-hmm. with Freddie. But how do you implement what you do? I mean, I saw like the cyclist or the winningest cyclist yeah. female out there. How do you, in the short period of time you have with him, implement your program? Or is it just kind of, all right, here's the first level? How do you do that?
Well, you can't do everything. I mean, we've only had, you know, 6 weeks. So you basically just have to break down, you know, what the problems are. You know, number one, we have to make sure we have to address his weight because he's, you know, changing weight classes. So food has been a big part of this process for him and making sure we keep the weight on him. Because, you know, normally he's been fighting at 140. So once you get that problem solved, you move on to the next one. And it's just, you know, no different than looking at a car and trying to figure out what's wrong with it. You know, if the tires aren't very good, well, we need to change those out. So we do things a little bit differently. I'm more focused on athletic ability. I don't really care how much weight someone can lift. It's basically useless in sports anyway. And
yeah.
For somebody like Ruslan, I mean, the most important thing that we can try to improve is his movement. And, you know, so we've done a lot of things in terms of trying to strengthen his feet and get his foundation better so that he can implement, you know, the plan that Freddie has drawn up for him.
How do you?
And that's really all we did, you know, what we're focused on.
How do you work with a guy that relies on, you know, coming forward, strength, and mm-hmm. make sure that they don't overextend themselves in terms of gassing out or using too much energy, learning how to conserve it?
You know, I think that, number one, if they feel confident in the conditioning that they have, and they know what their limitations are. I mean, we've been pretty structured in terms of the runs and stuff that we've done with him, pretty structured in terms of other work we've done in terms of improving his muscular endurance for his punching power and the consistency of it. And then it's just, you know, I think that really is going to come down to, you know, Freddie and his work with him during the fight. You know, I don't think that there's anybody better in the world at what they do than Freddie Roach. And, you know, it's been, you know, when you see somebody from afar and you recognize that they've had such a distinguished career as he's had, you know they're good. But
yeah,
you don't know how good until you actually get up close and are fortunate enough to actually watch him work. And I've been very lucky to be around a lot of great coaches and learn a lot of things from them. But, you know, if there's a better boxing coach out there, I'd like to meet him. He's just a very, very astute, you know, person in terms of being able to not only break down what his own fighter's weaknesses and strengths are, but also the opponent's and what's the best strategy. I mean, still a fight, you know. Somebody takes a shot to the head, they go down. And
right.
It's, you know,
yeah.
So there's no way around that.
I've watched him do tape breakdown, and you actually touched on something I was going to ask you about. Not so much him breaking down the opponents. I've watched him do that, and it is pretty impressive. But his own fighter, so does he sit there and point out, like, okay, I think this guy's weak here, here, and here. Can you improve it?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that that's, you know,
that's the whole thing.
I think that's Freddie's greatest strength, is knowing what his fighter's strengths and weaknesses are, and then not only that, but being able to communicate it and make them understand what they need to do. And remember, you're dealing with a language barrier here, so you're always doing things through an interpreter.
Right,
and,
right. Everything
and
flows through
funny.
Andre, or is it Vadim?
It goes through Vadim. But the funny thing is like, as the camp kind of went on, it's been really fascinating to watch how the more Freddie's worked with him, the less he has to say and the more he just has to show. And he completely reacts to it. So it's just,
he's a smart kid.
It shows you he's a very smart kid.
Let me ask you this. Are you going in there in Freddie Roach's gym? Are you taking over the other fighters as well? Or is this just a one-fight type of fighter deal?
I work with another fighter that Freddie is helping named Ximing Zhao, who's fighting April 6th in Macau, China. Right now, those are the two that, you know, he's asked me to work with. But based on the experience I've had, you know, with Freddie so far in these last, you know, 6-7 weeks, I would, of course, look forward to working with him, whatever he asked of me. Pro sports, you know, obviously you're always running into everybody's egos, you know, it's crazy how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Freddie is just so not like that. And so it's very, very easy to sit down and be able to talk over, okay, what do you need me to do? What do you want out of this person? This is what I think. This is how I best think I can help you, you know. I mean, it's simple. I'm not a boxing coach, and I'm never going to be one. My role is simple. I just need to make his athletes better conditioned and move better, and the rest is up to him and how he's going to implement that.
Have those two fighters worked with a strength and conditioning coach before? And if they did, was there some cleaning house or breaking some old habits they were doing in the past?
Well, Ruslan's, you know, he's worked with people definitely in the past, but I would say that it was fairly basic in terms of what they were trying to achieve. You know, and again, you're only as good as really the tools you have at hand. And so a lot of the, you know, trainers, if you've not been exposed to a lot of different systems out there in the world and how things are done, then it's hard to really, you know, search it out. It's taken a lot of years to be able to figure a lot of this stuff out. And it's also, you know, without having an athletic background of your own, I don't think that, you know, you would really think of, you know, a lot of things we're trying to implement. And, but, you know, Ruslan's path has basically consisted of just, you know, long runs and, you know, some light plyometric work and things like that. And what we've tried to do is really, you know, just improve his awareness of his feet and where they are when he's fighting and his ability to, you know, to move quicker laterally, those type of things. And Bradley's a very good athlete, and he's an excellent boxer. And everybody knows that Ruslan's extraordinarily tough and going to come forward. So I don't think, you know, just reinforcing what he already does well isn't going to help us very much.
I'm curious about your sprint training. I just spent some time up in up at the Undisputed Gym in the Bay Area with Donaire, and he works with Remy Korchemny, who's a pretty famous sprint coach, and they do like band work where he does these 40-yard dashes attached to like high density like bungee cords. I'm curious, and it builds resistance. What is your stance on running? They talk about how the old school way of sprinting or running long distances will create slow twitch muscles, and that's really the opposite of what a boxer wants. They want the fast twitch. So I was just curious about your approach to running training or sprint training.
Well, in fact, what's actually going to happen is this concept of what slow twitch and fast twitch muscle fibers is going to go away. So the understanding of how a muscle works, you know, with the latest work research in terms of the fascia and the importance of the fascia and the tendon complex. If you think of how a kangaroo moves, the energy is stored in their tendons and ligaments, and that's how they're able to repeat their jumps consistently. And so it actually entails a lot of ability to relax. Power actually is an ability of the body's control through the central nervous system, not in its muscle mass or its size or the idea that there's fast twitch or slow twitch muscle fibers. The muscles react based on how they're stimulated. And so when you do stuff like that, I mean, the speed training where you're trying to create more resistance for your fighter, that's an old 50-year-old method. That's nothing new. Mm-hmm. But most of the newer ways of trying to improve speed is actually where you do it the opposite way, and the runner is actually pulled. And what it does is it forces him into a greater state of relaxation so he can increase not only the frequency, but more importantly, the power that they produce off the ground. Usain Bolt produces about 1,200 pounds of torque in 0.08 tenths of a second. And the running mechanics, because so few of the people in our business study anatomy, is very poorly misunderstood. You know, they teach so many things of knee drive and dorsiflexion in terms of how they pound the ground. That's not how it works. The ground is a hard surface, and it's not a trampoline. So, pushing into the ground is never going to work. You have to push off it quickly. And so we've worked significantly with that in terms of Ruslan just absorbing force a lot better. But in terms of watching, you know, those types of speed training, I mean, we've trained a lot of people for the combine over the years in the NFL and stuff, and improving 40 times is something that's very difficult, and laying claim that you're doing that, you know, it, I would want to see the proof, because I know how few people actually pull that off in this country. It's very difficult because you have such a short window to do it, and so you have to improve the mechanics and you have to improve the structure of the body at the same time. Very few people are doing both.
Well, that's fascinating, man. How do you think? Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I was going to ask, because I know he's training boxers, but you're also training mixed martial arts fighters, right?
Yes.
And one of them is Pierre, I believe.
Yeah, George St. Pierre, right?
Yeah, what I was hired to do with George was to, he had ruptured his ACL. And what you're dealing with when you have that catastrophic knee injury is getting the force production back out of the leg. And what I do is we provide the gap between the initial physical therapy and his return to performance. And because what happens with an ACL and the surgery he had a patella tendon graft done. So he has a section of his patella tendon removed. That becomes his ACL. And when you do that, you have two injuries, basically, that you're restoring. You've got the damaged patella tendon and the ACL, and the quads shrink because of the damage to the patella tendon, and you have to get those all re-stimulated again, but also getting the force back. And, you know, unfortunately in our country, this concept of heavy weightlifting has proliferated so much without any research to show that it actually works in terms of sports performance. If they actually studied what the Russians produced over the last 40 years, they'd realize that heavy weightlifting negated power and speed every time.
Right.
And this has been proven over and over and over again, but it's ignored because in our country, you got to realize that we don't have a governing body that forces education on people like me. So if you're serious about trying to do this, you have to go out and learn anatomy. You have to learn kinesiology. You have to understand the exercise science and how the energy systems of the body work. And, you know, I've had to go do that just simply because of all the people that we've had. I used to outsource all that stuff, you know, because I wasn't comfortable doing types of basic rehab with people or anything else. But you start realizing that you have to learn it yourself because the product you were getting back wasn't very good a lot of the times. Not for sports. The force production is too high. You know, the amount of power that someone like George St. Pierre creates is excessive. So the muscle structures, the tendons, all those things have to be understood in how you're doing that.
What's the map out and to kind of create for – because, you know, we have always said that they're, you know, it's a completely different type of sport, boxing and MMA. So obviously the conditioning and training, it's got to be mapped out and planning and how to prepare them is completely different, right?
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, it depends on what problems you're faced with, right? Like when you're dealing with what happened to George and he had such a long layoff, you've got a couple of problems. The skill sets required in MMA are significantly different than they are in boxing, because they're multifaceted. So you're dealing with not only having to have striking ability, you have to have wrestling ability, jiu-jitsu ability, kicking ability. There's so many skills. And when you're out of the ring as long as he was, it doesn't matter how good you are, they erode. And when you're hurt, they erode even quicker. So restoring, you know, the body is one thing. And then you've got to get them, you know, the leg power back under them. The leg power is very similar regardless of what people think. Because the amount of movement you need, and I think that, you know, in boxing training, based, you know, on what I've seen so far, that I would say that it's behind the times of what's possible. I don't think that they've pushed the envelope at all, and I think that once you start, you know, implementing a few other ideas, that you can make significant changes in people. See, the idea in our country is what? That if you lift some weights, you can always get bigger. No one believes that you can make somebody more athletic. No one believes that. That's just patently false. That's like saying
right.
You can't teach somebody to play a piano. Of course you can. And movement is a learned behavior. It's learned by the central nervous system. It actually creates its own neural pathway. And it just takes time. And the Russians have shown this in so many different sports. It's crazy. Spartak is their main tennis facility where they train children. They're put there for 4 years. All they work on is biomechanics and footwork.
Wow.
Because it develops a conditioned reflex. United States, we don't do that. We just throw our kids into sports and we just, you know, the cream of the crop rides out.
Right, we hope for the best.
That's true.
Right.
We don't really develop
know?
Guys. You know, it is about personal drive a lot of the time.
Sure it is, because you don't teach the person how to use their body within that sport. And that's where all, you know, the egos all come in, right? Because you've got
right.
so many people saying they're experts at what they're doing, and, oh, I know the best, and I know the best. It's,
right. Yeah, the
you know,
guys with the whistles around their neck. I got you. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, we talk about the pushing the envelope, you know, I mean, that, you know, that in boxing they're kind of behind the times and stuff, but let me ask, do you think that the stigma of what strength and conditioning and the whole PED and HGH, has that made it more difficult for boxers to move forward? Yes?
Well, I don't think just boxers. You know, I dealt with, you know, a lot of baseball players as well. And, you know, we had several in this off season and, you know, who, you know, are really clean in their sport. And you know, it's frustrating for someone like me to watch. Like, I don't know if you guys watched Lance Armstrong's interview, but
yeah,
that was absolutely enraging to me. And
yeah.
The reason
why is that?
For several reasons. Number one, both my parents died from cancer. So for him to sit there with the attitude that he took with it, you know, my mother was 43 years old when she passed away from it. She had breast cancer and it literally just decimated her in 7 months. But had it not, had she gotten a second lease on life and beaten it, the last thing in the world she would have been doing was lying, cheating, and stealing to make her way forward in this world and justifying it because of her disease.
Yeah.
And so when you sit there as a person in my position who not only trains elite athletes, but also, you know, cancer is a close thing to me, and listening to the justification of what he thinks he was doing and why, and complaining that he's lost $75 million in a day, well, he seems to forget that he wouldn't have had a 75-cent day had he not been cheating. And,
right.
you know, the real sad part, I think, of watching that, at least for me, was that – had he been, you know, this guy that just beat cancer and just qualified for the Tour de France, it's the accomplishment of a lifetime, and he just doesn't get it. It never was about, you know, people in sports. It's not just about who's winning all the time. And what was hard is that while I'm watching this interview, I'm training, I think, at the same time, 9 different people, all have had career devastating injuries, all trying to fight their way back and doing it cleanly. They all have families. They all have children to raise. They're not doing that. And within this business, I mean, that was one of the things, you know, that the testing for this fight, you know, was done through VADA, and we were like, have at it. The only thing this guy takes is protein powder. So, you know, the last thing we're worried about is any kind of a drug test.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it, Ruslan is as dedicated to his training as anybody, but because he eats well, and people don't understand the drugs and what they actually do. Steroids don't build muscle per se. They increase recovery time. It's why it helps so much with something like baseball, where you're playing 162 games.
Right.
And it definitely helps you recover from injury quicker. And it really has made this, you know, business somewhat of a joke because of what I was said earlier. You're dealing with an uneducated group of people. We're not educated in terms of what we should or should not be doing. That's the nature of the business. And no matter what anyone says, that is an absolute verifiable fact.
It's dangerous, too, that it's completely unregulated. I mean, that boxing in general is very unregulated.
Mm-hmm.
But then you've got guys that are potentially simply chemists, or the, like Victor Conte calls
mm-hmm.
them, the dope men.
Exactly.
That come
right.
in. And it's, you know, I'm glad that you guys were so open and cool about it, that you know, Vadim wanted me to meet you, and that
mm-hmm.
you guys were so open to VADA. They really fought for that group in particular to test them. I'm curious. Do you do, like, when you're working with a guy, do you do blood work and the whole rundown on how his system is functioning? And I know, because I know VADA does something like that. So I was curious
mm-hmm.
how that all worked with you guys.
It really depends on what problems you're facing. You know, if we're dealing with something where we're having an energy problem or an energy issue, then I might do that. Usually we don't have the time for it. You know, like the baseball guys this year, we have 2 months really to get them ready for spring training again. Usually you're dealing with overcoming some injuries from the previous season. Football is 10 times worse than that. Because, you know, to give you an example, I have a guy, you know, that is recovering from shoulder surgery and toe surgery and trying to get ready for an NFL season. And we're very fortunate that the surgeon we chose did the job that he did, and it makes my job 10 times easier. But you oftentimes are just dealing with the reality of the situation. You've got a guy that's got to get back on the field in the next 4 weeks, has to get his job back. There's pressures.
Right.
And, you know, and that's the you know, sad thing with Armstrong. You know, it's just this guy could have, you know, had the most dominant cancer foundation in the world if he had never won the Tour de France. He just doesn't get it.
No.
You don't need to cheat. You don't need to, you know, and what is this teaching our children? Because this goes on. I train a lot of high school kids. It is an epidemic. And anybody that doesn't believe that is just simply naive. Epidemic.
Yeah.
But they're turning the cheek.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Gavin. Have you came across an athlete that either you've detected he had been on some type of enhancement, or he was openly honest with you saying, hey, I've been on something before. And what do you do from there? What was the
It's simple. It's simple. If you do it again, you won't be here. I won't associate with it. I have no interest in it. If somebody's done something in the past in terms of, you know, taking a performance enhancing drug or something like that, if they did it to recovery from, you know, from an injury, I understand the psychology of why they did that. I don't agree with it. But I make it very clear that I will have nothing to do with it. I mean, it's only happened once, believe it or not.
Okay.
And I don't know, maybe I just scare them off that way. I don't know what it is, but I really don't get that. The athletes I have, I mean, George will let anybody test him anywhere they want, anywhere in the world, any time of the year. He doesn't care because he's not cheating. You know, you know the guys that aren't, because there's certain types of muscle development that just don't happen without it.
What do you think about TRT and the proliferation of like therapeutic use exemptions for synthetic testosterone, particularly in Nevada, which seems to just give them out like candy? Do you think it's, I mean, a lot of times they'll say it's an indicator of a guy having used in the past, particularly a young guy, blowing out his endocrine system or his ability to make testosterone. Do you think it's a problem that's possibly rampant in Nevada or the UFC?
Oh, it's definitely a problem. I mean, there's too many guys that have already tested positive for it.
Sure.
And the other thing is until you test consistently for HGH, how are you going to make a system that is even worth testing for? You know, and the other thing you have to realize is the expense of doing it. Somebody has to pay for this.
Yeah.
So how do you work it into the business model? It's certainly, you know, if you're saying, you know, I'm going to do these synthetic drugs and there's going to be no effect on my health, are you kidding me? Of course
yeah.
there is.
Yeah.
So that's just a crazy assertion that, you know, someone would think that it wouldn't.
Man, we're hitting up to the end of the show, but I thank you so much. We would love to have you back, man. It's very educational.
I got one more question. I just got to ask, Gavin.
Sure.
You know, because, you know,
yeah.
you hit something that I've always wondered, I've asked other strength and conditioning coaches, you know, is,
uh-huh.
you know, these fighters are not getting that type of education. Obviously, they're putting their trust in whoever's walking in the gym
uh-huh.
with a time clock and a whistle. Explain, because we have a lot of fighters that do listen to the show and publicists and promoters. Explain those to the damage that does occur after using these enhancements, you know, later down the line in life.
Well, specifically if you took human growth hormone, right? So there's people that you'll see that have had a elevated growth hormone in their system. Tony Robbins, I believe, is one of them. And you get excessive growth of the skull and the jaw and the hands. But the problem is over time, if you're taking it as an injection, is that your body stops producing it. And remember, growth hormone stops cycling for a reason. You stop growing.
Right.
You're not meant to just, you know, grow into this massive oak tree. And so when you start messing around with nature's hormones,
yeah.
you're dealing with a big problem because it doesn't delineate what it's going to grow. So if you've got disease in you, you're stimulating all of those things. It doesn't, you know, select out and say, hey, I just want to build this muscle or, you know, this structure.
So
and
this
idea the idea that this excess mass helps you is just ludicrous. If you think of any basic working joint, say a door hinge, if you put more weight on the door, it pulls at the hinges. It weakens the connection points. It doesn't strengthen them. There's no arguing that. And so there's a huge misconception in terms of what strength is. The body has to produce strength through energy, not muscle mass. And it does so neurologically. And it's a neurological process that is fine-tuned over years of training. So you need to sit down and actually figure out what you're doing and why. There has to be an end goal. You know, is this going to help me? You know, it's a massive problem in Major League Baseball now. What possible reason would you have a pitcher weightlifting for?
Well, it's weird. It was the aesthetic that was created by the 80s, 90s
mm-hmm.
steroid era with Rambo and Schwarzenegger when they kind of crossed
sure.
over into the action films. I mean, it sounds silly, but I think it's very true. And we kind
mm-hmm.
of get our aesthetics from the entertainment industry, and that became the aesthetic, bigger, faster, stronger. And that's not necessarily true. I work with go ahead.
Yeah. No, who do you work with?
Justin Fortune, who's a guy that believed in
Kind
of been accused of being on the bad side, but he was a power lifter, so he does understand the dark arts, but he's big on the plyometrics. I've been training with him for 3 years, and I would say I've dropped down in weight and increased like power and speed by just doing
sure.
the plyometric stuff.
Because there's a simple reason for that. So every human movement is based on a plyometric principle. A plyometric principle just means that there's a stretching out of your muscle and tendon before it contracts. The speed that it stretches out at, that's what your power comes from. And it's very simple to understand. If you take an elastic band and you pull it back slowly and then let it go, it fires back at one speed. If you pull it back very quickly, it fires back much faster. That's all plyometrics is. That's why your power increases. Again, it goes back to here's what my stimulus is. That's why, you know, the muscles respond that way. And the idea that, you know, going and getting this huge buff body is going to make you throw farther, it's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. There's a Russian, I'll leave you with this thought. There's a Russian trainer, his name was Bondarchuk. He's considered the greatest trainer in basically the history of the world. The most gold medal winners, everything. They tested all 7,000 of his athletes over 20 years. Gold medal winners, everything. Strength was determined in all of them, of the gold medal winners, was average. It was a non-factor in their performance. This isn't my, you know, I didn't make this stuff up. This is all easily verifiable if you look him up. So
Wow. The
idea that you have to have strength, yes, but you have to understand what it is. A punch is just a release of energy. Your match
yeah.
can actually impede that.
That's very true.
You
guys get too muscular. Shane Mosley, I think, did that a lot to himself. He got kind of bulky. And Holyfield, I thought, diminished his
mm-hmm.
power by packing it
well,
on.
Well, that's what... Yeah, we use the water a lot. We use the water to avoid that. You know, we teach, you know, punching in the water, and because it forces the body to relax. You can't be, you know, tense and move quickly through water. It doesn't work.
That's true. I think you moved the line a little bit tonight, Gavin. I'm not sure if Vegas is listening, but
yeah.
I've been telling people that, you know, this is a real fight. This is a real dangerous
fight.
Oh,
man. You know, if you know, I'm sure Bradley knows that and he's figured that out, but Ruslan is prepared. I really believe in what Freddie's approach, you know, was to him and what he's trying to get him to do in there, and he's as prepared as he can be, I think, for this. You know, I think for this type of fight in the United States with the judges, you never know, but he's
yeah.
not going to want to feel, you know, he's going to feel the power of Ruslan, and it's definitely going to get his attention. You know, this is not some kid that can't hold his own. He can. And the last thing in the world, you know, we're expecting is that he goes in there and loses. That's just not a mindset that anyone has. I mean,
right.
It's a fight. Anybody can win. You know, George St. Pierre is fighting the same night. Is George a better fighter than Nick Diaz? Of course. Of course he is. But it's a fight. You can still lose. You take the wrong shot, you go down. This
Absolutely.
Isn't, you know, this isn't choir practice. So, you know, and it's just, it'll be really fascinating to see, you know, how this all goes out for Ruslan. Everything went great. His last sparring session was Monday. It was amazing. He's positive. He's confident. You know, he's injury free. I think he's ready.
Awesome. Yeah, I can't wait. We haven't made a pick. We're probably about to in about 5 minutes here, and I keep leaning towards him. I think he's the puncher in the fight. I like the way he goes to the body. I think he's really fluid, and he's kind of mentally
mm-hmm.
figured himself out. And
mm-hmm.
really, the bottom line is he's given himself by hiring you. That the kind of to me the cherry on top. He's given himself the best possible chance to win, and I really like that about the team. It's a unified front. So,
yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. And I think that his time that he spent with Freddie, the last camp that Freddie had with Manny, really has helped Ruslan. Because, you know, it's all that time that, you know, he was able to learn from Freddie, and he was also able to learn by sparring with one of the best fighters that's ever walked the planet. So the
right.
more better competition you have, the better fighter you become. And Ruslan can punch. So it's not like, you know, if he can get his combinations in there isn't going to be damage. There is.
Yeah. Well, cool. I wish
yeah.
you I wish you the best. I'll see you Saturday at the fights, and good luck to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you too, man.
Right.
I really appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you.
Man, I appreciate you coming on. If you want to follow Gavin, you can follow him on Twitter at Sports Science Lab. Dude, it was a pleasure having you on. Very informative.
Thank you. Okay,
right,
man. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Woo! Hey, it has been a busy night here on Leaving in the Ring. If you haven't got the mobile app, you should. You can catch the replay on the mobile app, and you can hear the Brandon Rios' playlist on the mobile app, and you can catch the Naked Truth on the mobile app, and Boxing Blitz, and of course, Leaving the Ring Radio on the mobile app. Let's get to our fight schedule really quick. Gonna run down. We only got a few more minutes. We're probably gonna run over.
I'm gonna fly through it. I'm just gonna
get
crazy. March 15th, Friday, at the Twin River Event Center in Lincoln, Rhode Island. Peter Manfredo, 38-7, versus Joe Spina, 26-3-2. It's
a rematch.
You know, little local flavor there for you. March 16th, Saturday night, at the Home Depot Center in Carson, California. Gabriel Montoya takes on Mark Ortega. Well, wait a minute. on HBO, that'll be in the parking lot. Timothy Bradley, 29-0, versus Ruslan Pravodnikov, 22-1, for the WBO welterweight title of Carson, California. This is going to be a really good fight, dude. You know what? I'm going to go on a limb. I mean, I'm digging Tim. I'm liking where he's at. He's probably going to win, but I'm going to ride the Provodnikov train on.
You're
going to
go with the underdog guy.
I've just got a funky feeling. He really feels like a man of destiny, and Tim does too. I think it's going to be a great fight. I think people are going to be really, really surprised. I'm going with Ruslan. That's like a body shot, just out of nowhere.
I don't know. You know what? If anything, Timothy is a very durable guy. He's shown he can easily adjust in the ring. But, you know, the layoff is what kills, I think, Timothy. You know, I mean, he's done long layoffs. But, you know, two times in a row you fought once and then you went back on layoff. That's the only thing that raises a flag in my opinion. But I've never picked against Timothy. I'm still a major fan of Timothy Bradley. And I think that, you know, Ruslan is just another guy that's almost like Abargu, but a little bit more polished. But in terms of strength and coming forward and can throw big punches, he reminds me a lot of an Abargu fight. So I'm going to go with Timothy Bradley by a unanimous decision.
A solid pick. I think if Tim wins, I see a scenario of cuts, something like that, swelling, because Ruslan does cut and swell. I think that might be his undoing, although I'm not sure who the cut man is for this. Freddie likes to use Miguel Diaz, who's a very quality cut man. So if he is in the corner, expect the swelling to be taken care of. But Ruslan's got a pretty tight team. Andre, again, his last name is escaping me at the moment. The co-manager might be in the corner as well because he speaks Russian. But sometimes Vadim Kornilov, who's the manager, works in that capacity. So it's going to be interesting, but I think it's going to be a fun fight. In the co-feature here, Jesse Vargas, 21-0 versus Wally Lucky Boy Omotoso, 23-0. I got to talk to Vargas. We talked at length with his trainer, Robert Alcazar. You should check out that interview from last week. This was our hidden gem of the week. Actually, Zahir Rahim and Gavin McMillan were the hidden gems. Last week, it was Robert Alcazar who blew us out of the water. So much so that one of our stalkers had to steal a little clip from it.
And the week before that, we had BJ Flores that really blew it out of the water as well.
That's right. We've had a lot of surprises here on Leave It in the Ring. I like Jesse Vargas in this. He seems to think he's the puncher, that he's going to end things early. Robert Zalcazar feels the same. I think he goes the distance, but Jesse has much better offensive tools and more of an offensive consistency throughout the fight.
Definitely got the better feet in this one. Lucky Boy's got to get really lucky in cutting off that ring. He's going to have to put in a lot of work to catch, you know, Jesse Vargas. Vargas knows how to get on that bicycle, and he knows how to box going backwards.
That's very true. You got Mike Lee, Jesse Magdaleno, Andy Ruiz.
I pick Lucky, though. Just to throw it out there. I'm picking Lucky Boy.
Goodness. You know, that's like the gym legend favorite right there. That's the gym legend pick. The guy that, you know, everybody says, like, you got to see this Lucky Boy guy. And I've seen him in the gym, and he was one of those guys. I was like, oh, first time I saw him. Then I saw him fight, and he's pretty wide. Jesse seems aware of that. Talked to him at the press conference. I like Jesse Vargas in this one. Dave, people that say we agree,
they're very wrong.
You know what? The fight schedule might be a little screwed up. I realize that we're a little bit on autopilot. So the rest of it is actually kind of jacked. So, Dave, this is one to look at. It's actually a story that will be going up on Max Boxing. At the Zamya Sports Palace in Nogensk, Russia, Denis Shafikov versus Alistair Rakhimov for the WBC Baltic title. I know people are a little upset about that, but it's a regional belt. Relax. It just basically evens things out, gets a guy kind of a bid in the world rankings. Maybe it doesn't move him all the way to number two, but it gets him in the top 20, top 10. Relax, folks. This is how they move up. This is how it gets done. Is the Nathan Cleverley, Robin Krasniqi, are we still on with that? I was a little thrown. Like I said, my schedule, I kind of realized that nobody's been updating the schedule that I normally use. And my computer's freaking out. This is all the karma for me giving you hell about your computer.
Yeah, no.
Mine is actually reached that age. I think he actually is fighting Krasniqi. But I think my computer is turned 40 before I did at the end of this month. So, Dave, that's your weekend fight schedule. Maybe that's a bad omen. What do you think? Andre Ward, Floyd Mayweather, 160-pound catchweight. Who wins and why?
I'm going to go with that. I don't think that would ever happen. But I would go with Andre Ward, you know. A lot of the moves that Floyd does wouldn't get past the style that Andre Ward would approach with, you know. So, yeah, it'd be one of those nights for Floyd, and that's why he wouldn't face a guy that would mimic Andre Ward, in my opinion. Styles make fights, and styles can make you look sloppy and disgusting, and that Ward style would definitely make you look sloppy and disgusting.
I think that Andre Ward, Floyd Mayweather, and Bernard Hopkins should all fight each other at the same time.
I want to see Ward and Hopkins. I got to be honest with you. I want to see that fight.
I would like to see Andre Ward kick Hopkins' ass. I think he would do it. I think he's mean enough. The thing I've always liked about Andre is his mean streak. He's kind of like a gentleman, but then it's like, all right, I've had enough, and he rolls up the sleeves and he goes to work. You know,
it's like a Robert Ghost Guerrero. They're in the same.
Yeah, line. Yeah, exactly. They're kind of classy, but you look at him and Andre, I could easily see him with like a Tommy gun in his hand or something, or like, you know. I don't know. He just seems like there's a little bit of gangster there, and I kind of like it personally. Sorry to Ryan Bibbins.
He's
got to
have a little bit of gangster in him, you know.
We'll get you on next week. I'd like to talk to maybe, getting you on a little segment and do a little gym report action. We'll discuss. It was nice to finally talk to you. Dave, as always, fun show.
Peace. Absolutely. And everybody, enjoy your weekend. Make sure you stay safe with your family. Don't drink and drive. And we will talk to you next week. On Thursday night, same time, same place. Don't forget to download the app, as usual. But everybody, have a great night. It was fun.
Peace. Unity.